Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 79, your one-stop for manga news and commentary for the week of January 6th, 2013. I am your main host, Derek, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mo.
Good morning, everyone. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, indeed. Yep, well...
just like 6 days ago. Well, 5 days ago.
Well, yeah, but, you know, this is the first time that we've recorded since then, so... yeah, it's a brand new year, and that means it is time for us to do crazy things and review all of One Piece. Yeah! that's not a completely insane undergoing, now is it? Alright, so as you may remember... and we'll go over this a little bit more when we actually get to that segment, but since we're introducing the podcast and this is the big thing for this year, One Piece is very long, and it would take us a while to go over volume by volume, so what we're doing is we are doing 3 volumes a week. So starting off this week, you'll notice that it's volumes 1 through 3, and then we'll go 4 to 6, 7 to 9, and so on from there. And we might... if series come out, new series that we, well, not new series, but new volumes of series that we've already finished and are reviewing every volume that comes out, like Fairy Tail, what we'll end up doing is we'll still do the One Piece that week because, you know, we kind of can't take any breaks from that. We need to actually get through it all the way. So,
okay, first of all, how many volumes of One Piece do you have? I only have 13 still.
I've got... how many do I have?
I have 13 and then 21. I've 1 through 13 and then just volume 21.
I have them. I have 27 volumes.
Double mine.
And then I have volumes 30 and 33. So I'm gonna have to buy some new ones at a certain point. But I've got enough of a buffer to last me through. Well, how long will that last me? Let me check our schedule. We're looking at right, because right now what we're looking at, if we do 3 a week.
Mine's going to last me about 4 weeks and that's it.
Yeah, mine's at 27. I'm going to be good until March, the very beginning of March, the very first week when we do volumes 25 through 27. And then after that, I realize how little I actually own. So... yep, using this as an excuse to get more One Piece, which this might get expensive.
You have a job. Stop buying swords and stuff.
I haven't bought a sword yet.
But yet.
Yet, indeed. I'm going to have to decide how I'm going to do this. I should probably start ordering new volumes now rather than waiting until, you know, March when I start, when I run out and need a new batch.
Someday when I have enough money, I'm going to walk into a Barnes & Noble and say, hey, I want like 50 of these.
Give me all the One Piece. Yeah, I'm going to get them off Amazon because it's less expensive that way.
True.
So, I'll have to decide how I do that. But for now, we've got some news to go over for the week. And since you may have noticed, we didn't have an episode last week because, you know, Shonen Jump was off, and it turns out that the Kodansha chapters were gone for 2 weeks instead of just one, which was kind of surprising. But yeah, that actually makes things easier on us as far as the chapters go. But we do have a fair bit of news to get through, so let's go ahead and start off with the Japanese comic rankings for December 16th through the 22nd. And in first place, we have Fairy Tail Volume 41. Yeah, that's cool.
Nice. In second place, we have The Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 6. Hey! Those two Kodansha series.
Yes, we do. We have third place, we have Ace of Diamond, Volume 39.
Fourth place, we have Attack on Titan, Volume 12.
I think that's a new one. Yeah, it must be the new one, because I don't see any of the other ones that high up. Yeah, I actually finished watching the anime.
He's been on a marathon of it.
Yeah.
You could probably go on that too.
Anyone that has a Crunchyroll account, you really should look into getting an Apple TV or just some kind of streaming device that has Crunchyroll on it, because watching anime on a big screen TV for stuff that isn't available on DVD over here yet is awesome. Best way to marathon anything.
Well, I don't have an LCD TV.
Shame that. All right, let's see. Well, anyway, moving on. But, like, anyway, yeah, with that, I will I'm going to be reading the Attack on Titan manga, so we might go over that one at a certain point, volume by volume, as usual. It will kind of depend on how we're doing with One Piece. We might, I don't know, we might end up just doing, do One Piece every week, and then have other manga that we discuss like a volume or two of.
After an arc, then we do some other manga. Then we dig back to the One Piece arc.
We could do something like that, stretch things out a bit. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be against making this last all year. But, I don't know, or we might do, we cover 3 One Piece volumes anyway, and then we and then we do another manga that we talk about as well, because, you know, I'm crazy. Anyway, where were we? 5th place, Chihaya Furu, volume 23.
6th place, Hozuki no Reitetsu, volume 12. I think that one has an anime right now.
Does it? No.
I think it does.
7th place, Hayate the Combat Butler, volume 39.
Yes! 8th place, Soul Eater, Volume 25. I guess that's the last one.
Huh. I think it is, yeah. That is. Speaking of series that we need to finish.
Oh, yeah, monthly. Right. They're shorter, and I thought... 13, right. Wait, we're only at 13 here, then? Wow.
Mm. Yeah. 9th place, UQ Holder.
You should read that.
Yes, I should.
You should read that, and not because you want to wait until a certain reveal is revealed. Yeah, I know that, but I'm reading it, too.
Yeah,
anyways, 10th place, Genshiken, Volume 15, second season, Volume 6.
Indeed. Yeah, they're kind of doing that a little weird, but all right.
I'm not going to repeat the name again.
And then we have the New York Times Manga Bestseller List from the 15th through the 21st. And in first place, we have Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
Second place is Volume 2 of the same series. I'm not going to say the name.
Symmetry! 3rd place, One Piece Volume 69, Giggity.
4th place, Fairy Tail Volume 33.
5th place, Attack on Titan Volume 3. Why didn't you sell better? I wanted 1, 2, and 3.
It's not my fault.
Yeah, curse you.
6th place, Demon Love Spell Volume 5.
7th place, Black Butler Volume 1.
8th place, Naruto Volume 63.
9th place, Maximum Ride Volume 9.
Why is that still popular?
Who's buying that?
Not me. I don't know what that series is again. Okay, 10th place, Attack on Titan Volume 9.
Indeed. Yes, Attack on Titan is starting to do well here now. Alright, and what do we have next?
Watching the anime.
Let's see. New York Times Manga Bestseller List, December 22nd to the 28th. So we're closer to where to now. What happened to the Japanese list?
Yeah, they did not. They only had one for the something week. That was it. I could not find it.
Weird. All right. Well, let's see. First place, we have Attack on Titan Volume 1. Hey, wait a minute.
It's probably still on vacation. Anyway, second place, Attack on Titan Volume 2.
Yeah, dear. Black Butler Volume 1. Hey, where'd One Piece go?
4th place, Attack on Titan Volume 3.
Curse you, Black Butler. Would have had a perfect 1, 2, 3. Blue Exorcist, Volume 1.
6th place, Attack on Titan, Volume 9.
7th place, Maximum Ride, Number 7.
8th place, Fairy Tail, Volume 33.
Seriously? Oof, of all the ones to be on the top seller list. 9th place, One Piece, Volume 69.
10th place, Naruto, Volume 63.
Hmm. Indeed.
Oh, there's One Piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it went down a significant amount. That's too bad. All right, anyway, North American anime and manga releases for... Wait, where is it?
December 22nd to 28th.
Yep. All right, anime releases. Humanity Has Declined, Blu-ray and DVD collection.
That looks interesting. I want to watch that.
Mm. Yeah.
And the next one is called Say I Love You for Blu-ray... Why? Wait, what? I think... Okay, one is Blu-ray and one is DVD, obviously.
Must be, yeah, because that doesn't look great. Looks like a typo.
Definitely a typo. It's okay, I understand DVD.
DVD. Yeah, alright. Manga releases for back then, and this, of course, is all out now, but... Alice, the 101st, graphic novel, volume 3.
A Century of Temptation. Oh, okay, I know that one is. Publisher, right there, Dune.
Oh.
Mm. Obviously.
I see. Crimson Empire, Circumstances to Serve a Noble.
Depression of the Anti-Romanticist.
gods. Fetishisms, sexy wives. Son of a.
Hello, work. Hello, work. I don't work. You do, not me.
Yes, another porn. What the hell?
The heck?
Yotai Ka, also porn.
Oh, yeah, it is. Power Play, also porn.
Sankareya, Undying Love, thank you.
Zombies. Indeed. Speaking of zombies, anyways. Stardust, Traffic, also porn. Again.
Tale of Boobs, Chichi Monogatari.
Well, obviously, I wonder what this one's about.
What the crap? What is this? What is with all the porn this week?
I like the last one. That's the best title ever.
What the crap?
You walk into a bookstore saying, hey, I want to buy this, and then the person's like...
Not a chance in hell.
Okay, wow. on to the most daily, on to the most recent ones.
Yes, yes, indeed. For the North American anime and manga releases for December 29th through January 4th, let's see, what do we got? We've got Chrono Crusade DVD Complete Series.
SAVE. What does that stand for?
No. I think that's for when they save a series from a defunct licensing company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Dragon Ball Z Season 1 Uncut Blu-ray Set.
Cool. I keep putting that series out. Fate Zero Blu-ray Box Set 2 Limited Edition. Good gosh.
Huh.
And the DVD Box Set 2 Limited Edition. So it's not, you're not paying for the limited edition part. You're paying for the Blu-ray, because apparently Aniplex thinks Blu-rays are $100 more expensive than DVDs. What the crap? Right, what else do we have?
I can't know the other. Okay. Iki Tolisen, Great Guardians Season 3 DVD Complete Series. Oh, yeah, this is the one that they had to postpone, I think, a bit.
So you've got Nyan Koi Blu-ray and DVD Collection.
I need that.
Eh? Hey, don't hit things.
Sorry. Nyan Koi. You know, that series with the one, the guy with the battle with cats or something?
Oh, that
one? Yes, that one.
Right. Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that one around. Yeah. Huh.
You have it. Only I, DVD, and Blu-ray Complete Series Limited Edition.
Oh, dear. So I can't play H, Blu-ray and DVD Complete Collection.
It's got nice animation from what I looked at.
Well, that looks nothing like what I imagined it would look like. Huh.
I thought so, too, but it didn't say adult, so of course it's not. Anyways.
Well, yeah.
Sentai Filmworks, not the other ones. Anyways, manga releases. We have Attack on Titan Attack on Titan Volume 10.
Wait, why is that under...
I don't know. Oh,
well, wait a minute. It's still... Short. Oh, yeah. For a second,
it's really short. Oh. I know. I'm wondering where the other releases were.
Yeah, for a second, I was like, oh, wait. Why is this under the other releases? But, oh, okay.
I thought so, too. I was like,
yeah. And then we also got Attack on Titan Volume 11. Just the digital edition has come out now.
And we have Trigun Maximum Volume 2 Omnibus.
I should get Trigun Maximum. Heck, I should just get Trigun at some point. But,
yeah, speaking of Dark Horse, apparently they lost the license for the Star Wars to Marvel.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was like, ooh, okay. Disney's getting everything now.
Yeah, all the things.
Eventually, it has to be owned by Disney. It's like, wait, what the heck? Yeah. I think that'd be pretty awesome.
That would be amusing, I suppose. All right, what else do we have?
We have, apparently, my, okay, there we go. Toriko manga is going to take a 1 month break after the current arc ends. I think it's the, okay, after the Human World arc ends.
Right.
Did it end yet?
Not yet, I don't know, I haven't read
or
the...
Or just started, because basically the tournament arc, we know it ended a while ago.
Right.
And then we went to some flashback and learning about the antagonist and learning about more antagonists and, you know, more stuff. But yeah, it's gonna go on a 1 month hiatus. That's good though, you know. At least Let's hope that 1 month will actually work out well.
Yeah, well, I imagine what we'll probably end up doing is going to, is going to the gourmet world after this, and he just needs to prepare for it. So
yeah, just like how, you know, how One Piece is going to go to the new world.
Yeah, pretty much. So it seems to be the thing to take a month break before doing
a
the
new
next
part
big
starts.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I can live with that. It's something that, you know, readers would have to adjust to, but if that's the way things are going, I can definitely say that would be better for the creators anyway. So yeah, I'd be down with that. I wouldn't complain too much, or I wouldn't complain at all, because it's not my place to complain.
But, nah, I'm not even playing.
Yeah. All right, what else do we have?
Okay, Viz Shonen Jump is going to run All You Need Is Kill manga.
Cool.
The manga adaptation of the science fiction novel All
Wait,
You Need
what?
Is Kill, that one series that kept being put in our face every time for some reason.
Oh, hey,
is,
it's Takeshi Obata.
It's going to run, it's going to basically, that's going to be the new series that's going to be running in, digital here.
Wait, why is this in Weekly Shonen Jump?
I don't know, but hey, I want to see what, I was actually about to go and check it out myself, and then they go and say, oh, we're going to put this in Weekly Shonen Jump Digital. I'm like, okay, I'll read it here.
Huh. Yeah, oh, hey, it's Takeshi Obata is going to be doing the art.
Cool.
But yeah, it's an adaptation of the novel, not the TV series, the anime. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Age of Tomorrow?
Yeah. Oh, hey, it's starring Tom Cruise. No wonder they're adapting it and putting in Weekly Shonen Jump. I don't know. I'm not I don't really want that magazine to be a place where they show off adaptations or redos of old series or relaunches of old series. I want to actually see the new manga that's coming out. You know,
yeah.
I'm not into these adaptations and, you know, things based on other things. Cause I mean, we've seen that work out well. I don't know.
Seen that work out well. I mean, have you noticed that most of them got cut, especially the one you really liked and the one I like, except the one I like was kind of, had the creator being a douche. Anyways,
yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, so this should be interesting.
Okay, Chopper Man manga ends, but a new One Piece spinoff will start. Wait, what? What?
Yeah, there was a spinoff manga. Come on, this came out years ago. There was a scanlation for the first chapter, and then nobody ever touched it again because it was disturbing. It was, no, you would be amazed. It was absolutely awful.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There were puns involving mushrooms and baby penises. It was awful. It was literally take the weirdest of the weird stuff to come out of Japan and then add that element of creepy that only they can do. That's what it was. It wasn't, it wasn't weird in a, kind of charming way. No, it was legitimately, what the hell is wrong with your entire country? Weird. Fortunately, nobody on the internet wanted anything to do with it and never scanlated the piece of crap. So, thank you, internet. Okay, all right. What else do we have after that?
We get a response from the creator of Kuroko's Basketball.
Oh, good.
And he basically was just saying that, you know, he's believed that the suspect got arrested, and, you know, thanking everyone for making the investigation go well, and, you know, thankful.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's good. That is.
He's probably like, I don't know what happened, but I'm glad everyone's okay.
Yeah.
And I probably say the same thing too. Oh yeah, this one's pretty cool. Terraformer Showa: A History of Japan offer on free comic book day. Okay, mark this on your calendars, guys. May 3rd, 2014. I don't know where it is, but it's gonna be taking place nationwide. May 3rd, 2014, this year.
Yeah, go to a comic store.
I'm going to grab me a copy of Terraformer.
Yeah, I'm going to need to go. I'm going to need to go there early so I can get my hands on it, cuz last year there was a free comic book day little chapter thingy for the Avatar comics, and I wasn't able to get my hands on one because they were all gone.
That's a shame.
Indeed. But, yeah. Okay, what else do we have?
Camping out there anyway. By the time I get there, like, what the heck? I'm here early. You're like freaking pitching tents already.
Yes.
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Not that crazy. Anyways, Kenichi the Mind's Disciple 6 video anime listed by retailers. Okay, the 55th manga volume is going to bundle with the original video anime on February 18th.
Man, I need to watch those other OVAs. And I'm not even sure where they all are, but I kind of want to watch them.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, that's coming out when? February 18th, I believe?
Yeah, February 18th.
Yeah, excellent.
With the 55th volume of, yeah, 55th volume.
Cool, cool. All right, what else do we have here?
Well, just trying to be biased. I'm trying to be, what's the word?
Yeah, go.
Okay, Fantagraphics picks up license for gay erotic manga anthology Massive. And...
Huh.
Yeah. Okay, so, cool. Yeah, so basically it's gonna include the works of, Gengoro Tagame, Jiraiya, Seizo Ibisubashi, Kazuhide Ichikawa, Gai Mizuki, Takeshi Matsu, Fumi Miyabi, and Kumada Hosuke.
Hmm.
And, okay, picture book originally licensed a collection. Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
And apparently it's known as Bar. I think it's known as Bar, but that's good, you know, for the people who like this stuff. That's good.
Indeed. Indeed. Let's see. What is this here?
Okay, next. New Battle Angel Alita Gun, also known as that by that name. Manga to start in 2014. Manga creator Yukito Kishiro announced on his blog on Wednesday that he will start a new gun. I'll just call a new Battle of Angel Alita. I'm going to say the name. Manga series in the second half of 2014. It's going to be titled Kasei Senti, The Martian War Chronicles.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So the second 2014 issue, the current one is gonna end in the next chapter on January 28th. So the next one's gonna start in the second half. So I guess June.
Right.
Hmm. Yeah. And this series, the original one's been around since like 1990 to
95. Yeah, I remember reading the first couple volumes, but I wasn't able to really get my hands on any.
I'm still hoping James Cameron actually, you know, does the adaptation, because I remember reading somewhere, and I was like, hey, this guy's good. I mean, I didn't like Avatar, but he's good.
Yeah,
I can trust this guy. Yeah. I can trust this guy.
Yeah.
And then, okay, hopefully this is the last bit of the Chronicles Basketball guy. So he gets him. This is interesting because apparently they think that anyone that's a stranger or whatever on Japanese websites or whatever is a Korean foreigner living in Japan, and they're known as Zainiki. And he just says, "I am not a Zainiki."
Hmm.
And that's it, because I don't want to give him any more popularity right there. Okay.
Yeah, we're done.
We're done.
We're done. We got it all taken care of.
Okay. Okay. Next one. Satoru Hira launches new Hotaru no Hikari manga this month. Okay, just show you.
Okay.
It revolves around Himono woman, dried fish woman. Basically, a young woman who has abandoned romance.
I see.
So the main character is Hotaru Amamiya, who has safely escaped the life of a Himono and married her boss Takano. However, she finds that married life is not so easy, as she begins to have doubts of Takano's loyalty.
Hmm.
Yeah, you don't marry your boss, people.
Or star in a weird manga.
Okay, this one's interesting. Wait, how's this really? How's this manga related? It's a speed racer. Should I talk about it anyway?
Which one was it? I don't know, we never mentioned it before, so no point.
I didn't realize it, but I just thought it was interesting. I don't know why. But this is not manga related, but for those who are familiar with Speed Racer, somehow there was a lawsuit going on with Tatsunoko and some other company called Speed Racer Enterprises. And long story short, Tatsunoko got it.
Yay.
That's nice.
Hmm. Yeah. So what it was, this other company
I guess they had the name and they're like, hey, you can have that name, that's our name, but we just mumbled it. Too bad, it's ours now.
Huh. Weird. That is such an odd thing. Alright. Let's see what else do we have here.
Okay, next we have unofficial city mascot Funashi gets a manga series.
Okay.
I don't. Hang on. Okay, so Funashi, the unofficial mascot of Funabashi City Chiba, launched a manga series in the February issue Shogakukan's Besatsu Korokoro comic special magazine on December 20th. Korokoro is also the one where they published the Pokemon manga in it, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think, yeah, that one. Korokoro. Or is that the people that bring up the news? Whatever. Anyways, so drawn by Maeda-kun, and the Pear Fairy is inspired by Funabashi's major fruit export and has her own theme song. Interesting. Okay. Next is, this is weird, a violent relationship manga hit on Twitter.
Yeah, I looked at that. That looks freaky.
I'm like, what the? I don't get the first one. What the heck happened with the first one?
Like,
in her face. Okay, the second one makes sense because he kind of just throws her, and the next one, and then the girl gets back at him by kicking him in the face or some other guy, I guess.
Yeah, it's basically you start off with a typical romantic setting, and then one of the two people in the drawing violently harm the other one. It's kind of disturbing.
Okay, next is Dogs kicks off New Year with the epic manga snowball fight. It's pretty cool because at first it's like the first picture, I'm like, what? That's kind of boring. And then it's like panning out. And then panning out more, and then you see someone gets hit by snowball, and then someone has a giant snowball, and then more people appear, and then the snowball is a giant snowball, and then somehow it has spiked for some dang reason, and more people appear, and there's people in giant snowboats.
Interesting.
No, yeah, that's pretty cool. And we have more New Year cards from Mangaka. We have one from Blood.
They can check that out on Crunchyroll. But yeah, the Blue Exorcist one is kind of fun, since it's basically a Walking Dead parody.
Jones-looking one, Centaur.
Yeah, that's weird. That's the end. What else do we have?
Fairy Tale author has said goodbye to you the year 2013 with Altair on the front instead.
Huh, interesting.
A really nice dress, except in the corner. I'm like, what the heck is that? And then he decides to puts a happy New Year of the horse with happy wearing a horse cap. Get it? The pun? A happy New Year.
Yeah, it is amusing, but yeah. So yeah, it's kind of just like a fun little illustration there. So. And I think that about wraps the news up. We're going to go ahead and move in and start our discussion of One Piece with volumes 1 through 3. And let's see if we can actually do this, shall we?
We can do it. We both have the same 3 volumes.
Yeah, we're good. All right. We'll go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss those 3 volumes.
Ciao.
Ciao. It is time for us to review One Piece, starting with volumes 1 through 3 in the beginning of our epic undertaking to review all of One Piece and to do it as fast as possible. Will we be able to do it in just half a year? Or will we get tired at certain points and decide, hey, we're going to take a break for a week and talk about something else and then come back and do it next week, which might be an idea. We might want to stretch this out over the course of the year depending on whether it's possible for us to review a volume of Fairy Tail and three volumes of One Piece in a single week, which is what we're going to try for next week. I think we should try that. Where, what I'm thinking, volumes 4, 5, and 6 of One Piece for next week, and volume 34 of Fairy Tail. Do you think that's something we can do, Mo?
Or, repeat that again.
What I'm thinking for next week, volumes 4 through 6 of One Piece, plus volume 34 of Fairy Tail, since that one just came out this week. Is that doable, or am I insane?
You're insane, but it's doable.
All right, cool. If it turns out that we decide this is stupid, let's not do it again, we might take periodic breaks where we'll read a volume of Fairy Tail and skip One Piece for that week. That would certainly stretch it out, and I'd have to redo my current schedule, but, you know, sometimes we may get fatigued with massive amounts of One Piece, and our listeners might get tired of massive amounts of One Piece, so I honestly don't know how anyone could get tired of massive amounts of One Piece. So,
unless they don't like One Piece.
In which case, they are no listeners of ours. That describes about 99.9999% of humanity. They are no listeners of ours.
Well, One Piece has made it into the news as of...
No, I was meaning 99.999% of humanity are not listeners of ours. Because they don't listen to the podcast, is what I'm trying to say.
Good point.
I'm being self-depreciative. Let's talk about One Piece, shall we? Starting with Volume 1, Romance Dawn. Which, last time I checked, I don't recall... Yeah, I think One Piece is one of the only ones that I know of where the individual volumes actually have names, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, all right, so volume...
Oh, wait, there's Bleach.
Does it? Do the individual volumes have names? I can't recall. Do I have a volume of Bleach laying around here somewhere? Okay, there we go.
Yeah, Bleach actually has the title, have the individual volumes named after certain chapters, like a chapter.
Does it? I'm looking at it. Oh, yeah, I see it. Okay, but it's on the inside. It's not actually on the cover, you know? It's on the inside of the thing. Let me check Fairy Tail. Maybe does it have anything? Let's see. Just check Volume 10. No, it doesn't look like Mashima gives his volumes titles, which, not important. I just think it's kind of nice the way One Piece has it directly on the cover, you know? Which, I don't know, maybe do later volumes do that? Okay, what is that? Oh, here's one more. Okay, it looks like... Okay. Alright, it looks like the first printing or the first editions have the name of the volume on the cover. But the later editions, you know, the ones that don't have the shiny title? Those
first
ones
edition?
Don't... Well, not first edition, but, you know, the ones back, the ones that were printed after the speed up. Because, you know, originally, and there were multiple printings of it, these aren't the original ones, but originally One Piece had the shiny cover, the shiny, title. And then when they did the speed up, they changed things around a bit. The title isn't shiny anymore. And it has the name of the arc or of the saga on the front of the cover, but instead it doesn't have the name of the volume on the cover, which I think is a bit of a shame because now half of my collection is inconsistent with the rest. I'm not pleased with that. But nonetheless, we are talking about Volume 1, Romance Dawn, which in this volume, what we cover, just to give a quick recap, we cover the Luffy's backstory, where he meets Shanks, decides to become a pirate, and receives his titular straw hat and leaves on his adventure.
Then, wait, is titular or titular?
I think it's titular.
Really?
Huh. I don't know. Or maybe it's titular.
I say titular.
That doesn't sound right at all.
I like it. It sounds cooler that way. I'll say it my way.
Yeah, well, this, you disgrace the language of my ancestors.
Well, you
well,
you disgrace people.
Well, a better comeback would have been, you disgrace the language of your ancestors on your own, because according to British people, Americans are terrible with English. Except they're wrong. according to what I've found out, apparently American English, or at least standard Midwestern English, is closer to original English than current British English. It's just with a certain way that we pronounce certain letters. But anyway, that's not the point, and I'm about to get a lot of English people angry at me. So
yeah,
I'm
and I'm only wearing one sock right now.
Yeah. Anyway, the first chapter is, of course, Luffy's backstory. The second chapter, we get into the... we have where Luffy meets Colby and defeats Alvida. Then in chapters 3 through... let's see, what was it? 3 through 8, I believe. Yeah, it's 8. We have Luffy meets Zoro, defeats Captain Morgan, and leaves Colby behind to become a Marine. And with Zoro, he ends up in the city, in the village, where Buggy the Clown... his pirates are currently invading a village on said island. And he meets Nami for the first time. So, that's volume one.
That's...
yes. Now,
that's volume one, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Now, I just want to say that reading volume one is always a bit of a mind freak for me. Because when I first got into One Piece, I started watching the anime. Because, as many people, we... you know, I saw it on TV, and fortunately I was in Switzerland at the time, so I watched the German dub, not the 4Kids dub, even though some of their edits were horribly obvious. Like, one of the most amusing edits that I remember is that for months, when they were doing reruns, I went through the Arlong arc several times, and... I would watch the part where Nami starts to freak out and she starts to claw at the tattoo on her arm. And the next thing I know, Luffy is standing above her. Her arm, her shoulder is bleeding. And I'm thinking, did I miss something here? And I was like, maybe they got something wrong in the broadcast. So I wait for the next reruns and for it to come back. And it did it again. It wasn't until later that I realized that, oh, wait, she's actually straight up stabbing her arm. And they cut that entire sequence.
In the German version?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Even they're like, whoa, well, that's too much, man.
I know. It's so weird. It remained pretty true to the original series, but at the same time, there was some of the heavier violence was cut, and I never even noticed it. They actually did something similar with Monster Rancher, where this was the Italian dub. They refused to air this specific episode, where one of the main characters basically dies by fusing together with another main character to save their life. And for the longest time, I was just like, I went through like 3 reruns until I decided, you know, I didn't miss this episode. They just didn't air it. What's going on here? So.
Oh, yeah, that happened for Pokemon as well, with like there's an episode where basically we see Ash and all these Tauros people like, wait, where did he get these Tauros? And it turns out it's an episode... they went to the safari zone, and the reason why the episode was cut is because the guy kept using a gun all the time, shooting people with it.
Yeah, I remember that. That is so weird when that happens. And yeah, I remember it as well. I was like, did I miss something here? But yeah, it is weird. Even Europe, even Italy, where porn is everywhere, they cut episodes where a cartoon character dies. It's so weird. And the thing was, with Pokemon, it's kind of like it's an episodic series. So, you know, you could miss it and just be like, wait, where all these Tauros come from? And think you missed something. But with this one, it was straight up Monster Rancher was not episodic. It was by that point, well, it was episodic, but by that point, each episode was leading into the next one. It was the climax and everything. So you get to a point and you're just like, I missed something. I very clearly missed something here. That's kind of what happened with One Piece in Germany, except they didn't cut entire episodes. They just cut that one extremely violent part. But that's neither here nor there right now. We're talking about Volume 1.
Yeah, let's not talk about the anime. Let's talk about the volume.
Yeah, good point. So, yeah, but anyway, the point that I was making when I brought up the anime again was that I'm so used to starting off with Alvida, and then later in a flashback going into, you know, Luffy's past. It's always so weird when I read the manga and I'm like, wait, they're starting with Luffy's past? That's not right. Even though it is, but I'm so used to the anime.
And well, then, I'm not used to the anime, so I'm just, okay, whatever. It took me a while to start out, starting it. It's like, when you read something over and over, you normally would think, hey, I'm kind of getting tired. You lose this novelty, but when I read it again, I was like, hey, wait. I like this again. I just need more volume.
Yeah, I remember earlier in the week, you were kind of, when I was trying to get you to read the stupid thing, you were just like, yeah, I'll do it. And I was like, I go to work, I get home. It's like, so, did you read it? No.
Oh, crap.
Like, gosh darn it, Mo! We're like days late on this. And then finally you read it and you're like, it's so hard. I've read this so many times, or I know this story so much, it's not interesting anymore. So it's nice to hear that after that you suddenly realized, hey, wait a minute, this is actually really good. Man, I love this series. And that's kind of what I think is, you know, I think this is actually going to do us a lot of good, because with One Piece, while currently, yes, it's great, it's a great, still an amazing series, it's one of the best, but at the same time, after there were like some arcs, like Fishman Island arc, kind of disenfranchised me after such an amazing, you know, after Marineford and such an amazing arc, to see Fishman Island and be all, oh, this isn't so good. But
I was like, this is Fishman Island, this is the arc I've been waiting for so long.
Yeah, so it's really nice to just come back to the roots and see that even though this was a very simple series, and there was a part where I was kind of reading the beginning of the second chapter and I thought to myself, wow, it's so weird to consider that this is the series that became one of the most popular manga worldwide, if not the most popular manga worldwide. And just looking at it from the beginning and just thinking how simple it seems and how the art is so rough and simple and cartoony. And you just consider that this is where it all started. This volume is essentially what got people into reading the series, or what had them think, oh, this is good enough, I'm going to keep reading, until they found something later that would really get them into this series. But one thing, the whole idea of One Piece's art was very simple and very cartoony at the beginning. That's an accepted fact among One Piece fans, where, yeah, the art was kind of cartoony, but it's
also hard to emulate, because when it comes to seeing fan art, I see more fan art of Bleach and Naruto and other series.
Well,
more than One Piece. Oda's artwork is a lot more unique than, I mean, it's still anime. It still has some anime aspects to it, but it's a lot more unique to than other art I've seen.
Yeah.
Because most art I've seen that seems generic, it seems feels like Naruto or Bleach.
Right. What I'm thinking what might actually be interesting to do at some point is to organize series based on their time of serialization and their art styles. Like, for example, let's see, Bleach and Naruto, their art is more in the vein of what we got from, say, for example, Rurouni Kenshin, you know, where it's very much straight up action series. It's got a very sort of more realistic in air quotes, body styles, but a more angular kind of body style, emphasizing musculature a lot more. Naruto, not as much, but Bleach, you can definitely see a connection between Bleach and Rurouni Kenshin, you know, with the way the character bodies are drawn.
Weird.
With One Piece, I find that the art compares a lot more to Dragon Ball. Not later Dragon Ball, but early Dragon Ball, you know, where it was a lot more soft. I mean, still you had muscular characters, but it was a lot more curvy, less angular compared to what it became, where it became hyper-angular and the art style evolved. But early on, it very much was a lot more round, and One Piece was very round starting out. And I think it makes it seem older than it... Bless you. I think it makes it seem older than it actually is, you know, because this is a series which, when did it come out? It was like, what, 1997?
97.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 1997. Let me double check Wikipedia.
Or 96.
Yeah, it was mid to late 90s, and it was August 4th, 1997. Yeah, so late 90s, mid-late 90s. Excuse me, mid-late 90s. Oh, doggone it.
Drink water.
I've actually got some fruit juice here.
Drink water.
I like my fruit juice. But anyway, so, yeah, it was around 1997, which if we compare it to Dragon Ball, which came out, oh, when was that exactly? Load faster, Wikipedia. That one, Dragon Ball was originally licensed in December 3rd of 1984, and it ended June 5th of 1995. So 2 years before One Piece was serialized. I didn't realize that.
Wow.
But yeah, so it's kind of interesting where you see how by 95, Dragon Ball had gotten the more angular art style. And then 2 years later, you've got One Piece that comes around with an art style a lot more reminiscent of a series from the 80s. Which, you know, and another, oh, let's compare Rurouni Kenshin.
Oh, fun fact, all the ones worked as an assistant for the mangaka Rurouni Kenshin.
Mm, yeah, yeah, it is.
He and the Shaman King author, he and the Shaman King creator were.
Yeah, which kind of interesting because, you know, he didn't really seem to pick up any artistic art styles. Okay, so Rurouni Kenshin ran 1994 through 1999, so that's around the same kind of time frame that we're looking when, you know, Dragon Ball was very much a much more angular series. And then we have Bleach, which picks up in 2001, 2 years after, Rurouni Kenshin ends, with a much more kind of similar sort of angular art style, if a bit rougher. And Naruto, which started publication in 1999, so around the time Rurouni Kenshin ended. But that one, well, the art style isn't quite as related to Rurouni Kenshin as I can find it. I don't know. It just does seem like there is very much this period where you have much more rounded art, and then it starts to go more towards a much more angular style. And One Piece definitely started off with the rounded art, and even now, it remains not really rounded as much. It's a lot thinner, leaner, but still at the same time, it's not that hyper shonen style that we got in the late 90s, early 2000s. So, but anyway, yeah, that's, but still, even with the art being very, you know, very simple looking, very cartoony looking, I think what really stands out when I reread the first volume is it's just very clear from the very beginning that Oda knew exactly how to lay out his panels, how to, you know, just design the panels with the angles and the way the characters are positioned in the panel. And even early on, he's able to do this and have a lot of detail in the background. Granted, there are, of course, some panels where that are just blank that don't need background, but there is still, he starts off with really good, strong backgrounds, where this isn't a series where it's all about, here's the character in the foreground, forget the backgrounds, we're just going to do a screen tone for the background. He actually builds his world, because he's working in a fantasy world. This isn't, you know, set in Tokyo, for example, where, you know, just you do a manga set in Tokyo and you just have to be like, here's some buildings, you know what the rest looks like. You don't have to actually do backgrounds. But with this, the backgrounds are crucial, and even though they may not be noticed as much, I do feel that the fact that he started off with some really strong backgrounds really does help build the world, and that's where his art, you know, just gave him a good start with just having it be so detailed. Even then, even when it's cartoony, it's still very detailed art. And you can see very early on how much he likes to have, to work with elements in the background. Like for example, you have Luffy who's eating, then the bandits come in chapter one. And when you have all the reactions, you see he's eating this fruit, you know? And you don't, in the anime, they do this whole thing where he's just like, you know, it makes it very, you know, it points out very much here, he's eating this fruit and suddenly Shanks is like, hey, wait a minute, what are you eating? In this one, it's just straight up, you'd miss it if you didn't know what it was. Like, if you were reading this for the first time, you'd be like, oh, that's a weird looking fruit. But that would be the most that you do. You wouldn't pay attention to it. And then it's not until several pages later that suddenly it becomes important. And you see just this very early on that Oda loves to have stuff happening in the background or stuff happening while something more important at the time is happening and then bring it up later. That's very much, kind of very much foreshadowing his habit of taking things from hundreds of chapters ago and then bringing them up again, like much later. You know, and how he likes to bring characters back, plot elements back, and how he likes to introduce plot elements at a certain point and then come back to it years later. It's on a very small scale. This is foreshadowing this, you know, just this habit of his or this stylistic choice of his. And so, yeah. Okay, one thing that I have to say, every time I read this and I read Zolo, it's like there's a bad dub in my head that dubs Zoro over it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're talking about that.
Zolo? I'm like, what?
Yeah. I would put down money for a reprint of this series that corrects the name. I know it's not a big deal. I correct it in my mind, but at the same time, I would buy the series again if it fixed the name. It's just, anyway, but still, it's like, you know, you'll have a scene where it's like,
oh yeah, yeah, I see where he's eating the devil fruit. And like you, when you read through it so fast, you don't know, and then you go back and go, wait, what? Oh my goodness, he was eating it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's important. That he totally planned that out. It's just,
oh yeah,
it's
oh,
good continuity. He knows continuity.
That's Stima Oda. He like you say, he knows continuity. He plans ahead. Unlike all these other guys, I'm not saying they're bad, but
well.
There's a reason why they're not my favorites.
Well, yeah, I mean, Oda.
He knows. It's like if he was a writer, he could still do a damn good job selling his books. But he's a mangaka, and he's able to.
Yeah.
He plans everything out. He like even a little of the details, like you said, those details actually matter. It's like later on in the next few volumes, we're gonna see a certain character. We'll see very very far later on, and you go, wait, what?
This is very much just the fact that he plans everything out and he's able to do it on a chapter level and on a multi-chapter level. That's what makes Oda so great, and that's very clear in this first volume.
We're not fanboys for no reason. We are fanboys because he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, we started this off trying to be like, we will be critical and we'll probably pan the first couple volumes until we get to like the Arlong Park arc. Except now I'm like, you know, forget that. I'm going to fanboy all I want. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still, as I was mentioning about how I dub Zoro over it, for example, with Alvida, is that the bounty hunter you hired? Well, he certainly isn't. Roro Noa, Zoro. That's what happens every time in my head. There's just this monotone voice that comes in and replaces the name. But so for the story overall, we get three stories here in the beginning of a fourth one. We get Luffy's introduction, we get Colby's story with Alvida, who again comes in later. We also get the entirety of Zoro's introduction with his backstory, and then we start off with Buggy's story, but that will be for volume 2 when we discuss that. So the stories themselves, I mean, we can talk about the panel layout, the art layout, the fact that Oda plans everything ahead and manages to, you know, just weave continuity in properly so that it just ends up with a much richer manga, with a much richer story. We can talk about that all we want, but what about the stories themselves in this volume? I think one thing that I'm noticing is that it seems like this first volume has a lot more story. That's one of the things about One Piece. You get more when you read. This, a lot of manga I find will do like maybe 2-3 stories in the first volume at most, and here we get 3 with a fourth one starting. And I think that's pretty amazing. I mean, even though the Captain Morgan and Zoro story takes a while, I mean, that's several chapters, it still gets through it and has enough space in the volume for other stories. So, but
hang on, hang on. Okay, so at the very end of the, at the very end of the first volume, they actually talk about how One Piece was created. Mm-hmm. Basically, the original story, the first original story of One Piece appeared in one of all those Vince's Wanted one shots of all those other stories in there. And for some reason, I have a feeling we're gonna see a bunch of those stories intermingling into One Piece eventually. So, I mean, we kind of did get one that comes later on.
Maybe, I mean,
think about it.
No.
I think okay, well, not all of them.
Yeah, there are certain elements that yes, but certain elements no, not a chance. Like the whole magic pirate from the first one, I'm like, that's not gonna happen. But yeah, so, but I mean, whether they mix those elements in or not, I mean, well, Luffy's backstory on its own, just as an introduction to the manga, do you think it works? Or do you think that the anime switching things around by starting off with Alvida, then flashbacking back later, do you think that what that works better? Or do you like it better the way the manga just straight up starts off? Here's a kid, now he's older. You know?
I have to say that, well, I guess, man, it's kind of hard. I kind of prefer the manga version, but the way the anime did, I think it's better because, you know, people don't want to see flashback, oh my goodness, again, story. But yeah, for some reason, I kind of like the idea that, you know, with the way Oda does, it's better because, you know, it's like, it's the beginning of an epic adventure, and it is an epic adventure.
Yeah.
Nobody tell me wrong. I'm going to 100 tell me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, granted, yeah, it does, you do get to start off with, here's what you need to know, this is our main character, and this is the start of something big. But at the same time, I think I might be one of the rare people that actually likes the way the anime does it better.
Yeah, good point.
Granted, doing a flashback, having to do two flashbacks in a row, basically, for Luffy and Zoro, may not be the greatest way to tell a story. But at the same time, I feel that it works mostly because when you start a story, usually what you want to do is you want people to know exactly what the story is about. You don't generally want to start off with, here's something that happened 50 years ago, then go on for a chapter about that, and then chapter 2 skip forward to, hey, here's the actual story. Here's the actual main character.
Don't try a dream sequence like that. It doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Where you get invested with the main character from the first part, like first chapter, but then you find out that's not even the main character. In this case, it does stay focused on Luffy as the main character, but we're introduced to him as a kid, and it's only at the end where it's like, he's an adult now. So you start off reading it and start thinking, okay, is this going to be a story about this kid? You know? I mean, that's not usually the way people think about it. I think people adjust to he's going to be a teenager throughout the story pretty well. But at the same time, I do feel that Toei's decision to start off with Alvida, make some slight changes to it, start off with Luffy as a teenager, introduce him as he's going to be for the rest of the series until the time skip, was actually a smart decision. Maybe some people don't like it and prefer the way the manga starts it off. I still think that out of all the decisions that Toei has made, that is one of their better ones, and they made it for very obvious reasons.
Yeah, well, it makes sense because if they started off the way the manga, then people are like, wait, what? I don't want to read about some kid I just suddenly grew up in. It's going to have weird-ass adventure. But,
most...
It feels slow. I think the reason why it's slow, you know how beginnings always are slow?
Right.
That's why it was hard to get through chapter one because it was slow. I knew it was going to be good. I know it's going to start really good. It just starts slow. Story starts slow. It's really hard. It's amazing how Oda actually managed to get us through chapter one and then go, this is where this is where the real story starts.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so glad I got through chapter one.
Yeah, it is very true that the way he starts it off is very unconventional. We begin in a place that we're not going to revisit for like years in the future, you know? Like, we don't come back to this for years! And then the majority of it, though, I think it does still work. Maybe not my favorite way, mostly because I'm used to the anime's beginning, because that's what I first started out with. And ultimately, that's what really matters, what you start with. I do find, though, that the manga, the way Oda handles the Alvida story in the manga is actually better sort of, because it gets through her very fast. You know, it doesn't. The first episode of the anime seems to take a bit too long on her. You know, it's an entire episode dedicated to her, while here it's just one chapter, and that one chapter isn't very long. It's a standard shonen, you know, 18, 19, whatever pages. And we
and
get
it's kind of funny how the first villain we get, how the one the first villain we get is a female, but you usually don't get that in the series.
Yeah, true. Wonder what that says. But, yeah, and then the story with Zoro. I think I really like this story just because it, you know, it gives us it starts us off strong by giving us a good reason why we're supposed to root for pirates, where we see, okay, we've got Marines here. We still see that we've got good Navy sailors, Marines, in here. You know, we've got some good ones, but at the same time, corruption of those in authority is going to be a constant theme that will come back up several times throughout the course of the series. And it's good that it gets us into that very early on, because then we get a very strong sense of this is what you're going to have. Them sailing from, you know, port to port, encountering corrupt Marine officers, and, you know, they as free men and free women are going to be, you know, fighting against these corrupt people. Kind of thing. So that's kind of the sense that you get at first. And
there's so much to go, and that's just volume one.
I know this is gonna take forever, and I love it. But yeah, so definitely a great story. Or Zoro's introduction is always a favorite. It's one of the ones that I've seen the most, and it's always the first one where I really sort of like, you know, where I really sink my teeth into the series. It's not quite the one that 100% sells me, but when I think the beginning of One Piece, I always think the battle against Captain Morgan and when Zoro joins Luffy's crew. It's just that right there is just sort of
that's
like,
true.
We got Zoro, now we're talking. Like the first two chapters sort of like, but then you get Zoro and you're like, okay, this is right. Yeah. And then
sorry, he doesn't like swords.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is that. But yeah, then we do get see Nami, her first introduction in the chapter. We don't get much from her, but
it is kind of funny how the man just kind of managed to stick like the first three main characters and Nami at the last minute.
Yeah, I know.
The volume does manage to stick her in the last minute. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I really do like how he is definitely moving very fast, where it's kind of like, you know, within the first volume, these are kind of like Nami, Luffy, and Zoro are always the ones that I feel are, you know, this is the core cast. Granted, I mean, we get Usopp, we get Sanji, and we get Chopper, and Robin
and Frankie
and Brooke. Yeah, we get those guys, they're all important, but it always comes down to those three, and because you start off the series with the cover. It's Luffy, Nami, and Zoro on the cover. That's the first image you get of One Piece when you pick up the volume. They are always the core. I mean, honestly, I could have gone several volumes with just these three. You know, there's just something about their dynamic that just really works, and I find that the anime spread out their, you know, their involvement before they get anyone else for a little bit, and I just think it really works for me.
Also, it's kind of funny how in chapter one, with the very first, you know, the very first cover chapter, that's the other thing about One Piece. The cover chapters are always amazing. Amazing. Sometimes it's just all they're having fun. Sometimes they actually mean something.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're like, what the heck is he? Okay, the first one. Yeah. The first one has, a romance dawn. I look at it, I'm like,
Dawn of Adventure.
There's one person missing on the cover. I see on the cover. It's like, where is he? But then you see those two. It's like,
yeah, it's like you see Luffy, you see Nami, but then you don't see Zoro, and the rest of them are all Shanks' pirates. And you're just like,
Shanks
wait.
Is awesome.
Yeah, yes, he is. And you're just like, wait, why is it just these two? Okay, whatever. But yeah, still, it is just this first volume is just really good, and it does. I just really like those three as the main characters. You know, I mean, I know the other ones are all amazing, but for me, it always comes down to Luffy, Zoro, and Nami.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, let's move on to Volume 2, Buggy the Clown, and where we pick up from the end of Volume 1 with Nami introducing herself to Luffy, tricking him into you know, going along with her, and then she gives him in to Buggy. She frees him from Buggy. They fight Buggy. Buggy has devil fruit powers, and he starts off, out of all the villains that we've faced so far, he's the first legitimate threat, you know?
Because he has a similar power to like Luffy does.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with the other ones were that they were shown up as, oh, look how strong this person is, and Luffy beats them easily. Buggy is one of the first, the first serious threat that Luffy actually had a hard time fighting. Granted, a good chunk of the fight is, well, you know, it's not actually in this volume. We don't get much of Luffy versus Buggy, but we do get it kind of split up. You kind of get the general feel of what this series is about as it splits it up with Luffy fighting Moji and then Zoro fighting Kabaji.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just kind of, you know, you get the sense of, you know, you've got the main bad guy, you got his underlings, and then, you know, that you have to fight the underlings first, then we fight the big bad. That's kind of that's basically the format that One Piece has been using for years, and this is the first time that we really see that, and it works really well. The Buggy arc is one of those arcs that I'm not that keen on.
I liked it. I mean, the dog was kind of hard to like. I was like, oh, come on, dog. Did you just, your owner is generally dead. You should know, but then, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it's just the thing about
I remember the dog. That's the funniest thing. I remember the dog. I remember the mayor.
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, it is sad. You get a little bit of the flashback with the dog. But I think the thing about this arc is that I feel that it went a little long. You know, Oda's not quite doesn't quite yet have the chops where he can make fights go on for volumes at a time. Here, he's not quite at the point. It's clear that's what he wants to do, but he's still struggling to really, really make those fights 100% interesting. They're still interesting.
He's always struggling.
Yeah, they're still fun. They're still fun, but it's just, you know, I just feel like it stretches out a little bit. It had some weird aspects to it that don't quite work for me. What does work for me is that this volume is really good for Nami's character, and the fact that she gets a lot of development in this volume really helps cement her as that, you know, the third crew member, as the, you know, she is the one that is, you know, you got Luffy, Zoro, and then Nami.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she is the one that came, like, you know, has been with Luffy the longest, with the exception of Zoro. And it really feels like you really get a sense just from this volume alone, even though we don't learn everything there is to know about her, you kind of get a feeling that, oh, we know what we need to know about her until later, and we get even more. But because we really get to see her go from, oh, hey, you want to help me? Oh, wait, you're a pirate? I hate pirates. To, wait, this guy's different. And then, you know, she starts to trust Luffy. And if this were where we left it, she would be an okay character, but then we get even more later on, and that will be discussed at its own time. But in this volume, it just really shows we get the necessary development to show why she might decide to join him, even though she hates pirates. And I think that really works well. For the most part, we've got the majority of this arc is, you know, the backstory for the dog. You got the fights with the underlings that take a fair bit of time, which, they're good fights, but at the same time, this is really good for Zoro because we get to see what he can do. Well, not everything that he can do, but we see how he can keep fighting despite being severely injured.
That's really funny because it happens for a while until a certain point.
Yeah, it's like he's constantly getting injured and still kicking butt, and you're just like, jeez, dude.
It's like, but I won't lose you. If I let my wound be,
even though I cut out half of my gut, I will not lose it. I'm like, oh gosh. It's kind of around the time that they get Chopper, where he finally stops being injured all the frickin' time. You know? Yeah, it's just, though I will say this probably wasn't the best fight for Zoro to start off with, because let's be fair, Kabaji is kind of a joke. I mean, he's played as serious, but he's a freaking acrobat. He uses spinning tops as an attack, and it's just ridiculous. And you just feel like, Zoro had a hard time against this guy? Are we sure this guy is actually a badass? Because Yeah. It's, I think, Volume 2, still very good, but to me, it had quite a few flaws to it that I find would probably turn some people off from it. But smart people will keep coming because this series is going to be amazing. But
it does smart people.
Yeah, the buggy stuff is not the series at its strongest. Now, you said you liked it. I mean, how much did you like it, like, compared to stuff that's coming? Why do you think it works for you?
It was decent. It was decent. You know, just, you know, it's all the still trying something out, still trying to see, you know, what worked for him. I mean, the thing is, the buggy one, was basically one of the abilities he's had in, like, planning for a long time, like, even before, probably before Morgan Albedo. And as far as we know, Buggy's also one of his favorite villains when he's asked later on in FBS Corner.
Well,
those things start coming in there and be awesome.
I do feel Buggy is definitely one of those characters that he is definitely memorable. But the fact that he was brought back later, well, spoilers, but I imagine most people watching this, listening to this, know that. But still, it's like, you know, Buggy became better because of what he does later. I don't feel that this was that great for his character, though. That's actually a little unfair.
You seem a little bit off, like something he's serious and something goofy, but then that's, you know, that's the idea of how we got, you know, all the villains.
Yeah, although I think the thing is, I don't know. There's something about this arc that I don't know why I don't like it as much.
It's all right.
It's kind of hard to put my finger on it because, I mean, honestly, where he is in the story, Buggy has a very similar role in the story to that of Crocodile later on. And we'll get into that more later on, but it's very much this was the first serious threat that Luffy ever faced. You know, someone with powers like his own, someone that they know Devil Fruit powers, they can, and even though his Devil Fruit powers are different, he can anticipate what Luffy's going to do. The other enemies that he's fought to this point had all been of the variety of, they didn't really even know that Devil Fruit powers were a real thing, so they're caught off guard and easily defeated. Buggy, on the other hand, was actually really hard. And as we get into Volume 3, Don't Get Fooled Again, we get to see the full fight against Luffy and Buggy, which actually doesn't take up that much. It takes up maybe...
I think that move is in that one game.
Oh, yeah. Ugh, screw that. No, but, yeah, it's like it takes up a good third of the third volume. And what's really... I like this fight a lot, just because, you know, the other fights have been kind of a little lackluster, but this was the first fight that we got to see two Devil Fruit users fighting, and it was a lot of fun. And even though Buggy was goofy a lot of the times, and the way he got injured, hurt a lot of times, was silly, but still, he, you know, he was very serious when he needed to be, and I think that the mix of serious and comedic work very well in this fight. And it's just, you know, I think what really kind of solidifies it as a good fight, in my opinion, despite the lackluster performance of the second volume, is just kind of the way he... I don't know. I think it's honestly the way that Nami gets involved in the fight, you know, where he keeps going after her to get the treasure, and then Luffy uses his distraction to just nut him.
Tickle the sneak. Ah!
He just straight up kicks him in the groin, and I'm just like, oh gosh, that's... Yeah, it's not great.
Well, yes, he gets kicked more than once in the groin.
Yeah, and it's just so weird how you go from him being, you know, making these weird faces when Luffy's messing with his feet, to being all serious and suddenly becoming a threat again as he's about to stab Nami in the back when she's holding onto the treasure, but then Luffy knocks him out. And I love the way he's defeated. He brings all his parts back together, and all he's got left is his head, his hands, and his feet. And Nami's stolen his torso and limbs and has them tied up. And I'm like, oh gosh, that's great.
Maybe, I'm looking like, wait, where's his neck? How is he going to bleed?
Yeah. How indeed. But yeah, that's what I just love about that fight, is we get to see that Nami is, you know, she's not a powerhouse, but you see early on that she is going to be useful in the series because, you know, she's starting off, she's a thief. She uses her abilities to help in the fight, and they win. you know.
Also, her main role ends up being the navigator.
Well, yeah, which we find out a little bit later on in this volume after they leave the island, and as they're sort of like going around, and Nami is like, "Wait, you didn't have a navigator? What the heck?" And so,
I see, that's a funny thing. I guess maybe some people, if they were to see Nami and they know and they saw that she's like some sort of like, you know, she's a navigator, but she's not just any navigator. She's like freaking good at telling the weather.
She's the best navigator.
She's like, if she went to meteorology, freaking everyone meteorology like just freaking throw their hats on, just quit because they can't compare to her.
Yeah, rage quit.
Rage quit.
Yeah, and another thing worth pointing out is that after they leave the village, after defeating the island, after defeating Buggy, they come to Kinemon's island, which Kinemon is the guy as, you know... Yeah, no, oh, what the crap is wrong with
How did you get that?
Gaimon, sorry.
Gaimon, oh.
What the heck, yeah, I have an excuse.
I didn't catch that part.
Yeah, but yeah, you've got Gaimon, who you got, have the whole, I need to find my treasure, this treasure, but turns out the treasure isn't there and all that, and he's stuck in the box. What's interesting is that in the anime, this happens later, after they pick up Usopp. Yeah. Here, we actually get a bit of an adventure that they have, you know, just like a chapter, just, you know, with Luffy, Nami, and Zoro, the main three. We get to see them together on an adventure before, you know, we have this moment where they have an adventure, just the three of them, and I think that kind of makes it feel different from a lot of the other characters, where this specific trio, you had Luffy has his fights Alvida, Luffy gets Zoro, Luffy and Zoro get Nami, Luffy, Nami, and Zoro have a small adventure, Luffy, Nami, and Zoro pick up Usopp, where they have this little adventure, just them, before they pick up the next guy, and it just solidifies them as more of a, you know, these are the main three. And then as they later on, they pick up Usopp and Sanji, and then after that, they have a couple adventures before they pick up Chopper. And that kind of solidifies those five. And then with Chopper, he kind of sneaks in there, and they have a big adventure, all of them. Then they pick up Robin, and it still makes Chopper kind of feel like a bit closer to them than Robin does at first. But still, it's like you've got those, you know, you got the main five, and then you got the main three that really feel closest because they've been together the longest. And Kinemon's story really helps solidify those main.
Gaimon,
son of a bitch. Gaimon. Gaimon helps solidify.
Gaimon is one of Oda's favorite characters. He even admits that he wished Gaimon could have joined, but he's like, no, this isn't going to work.
Yeah, but he is a fun character, and I love the concept. And his story really helps solidify those three as kind of like this is the core group. Among the others, you know, the others are all close as well, but it just feels like, you know, Luffy, Zoro, Nami, they're kind of like, they're the main three. Those are like three of my favorite characters, so, you know, there's a reason. Then we move on to Usopp, and we get up to the point where they discover Kuro's, the butler's, plan to, you know, kill Kaya and steal her fortune, and the pirates start their invasion. So essentially, that's where we leave off with Volume 3. So, beginning Usopp's story, we can't discuss the conclusion because we don't see it, but we do get to see very much just the introduction of, I will say that Usopp is one of my favorite characters, and this is I'm not sure how to feel about this arc. I know that there are a lot of people that don't like it, but I think for me, maybe it's because this is one of the ones that I've watched the most. This is kind of that arc where I'm starting to really get into the whole, okay, yeah, it's taking a while for this to get through, but I'm liking this better than Buggy's arc overall. Like, it comes together as a whole better than the Buggy arc does, and I just really like it.
I have to agree, because the arc before this one, I like that one. That one, I didn't know it was as memorable to me, probably because I had trouble trying to get through that one, because I had to get through this one first.
Yeah.
And this one, like you said, you've seen it more. I've seen this one just as much, too, because it just... Somehow, this arc, this is where you realize, hey, this is actually getting a little longer. It's getting a little longer. Something is actually starting to cook now and stuff, you know? It's starting to really cook.
Yeah,
it's still again there, but it's starting to really cook now.
Yeah, it is. It is very much. Yeah, it is kind of that. I don't know. It's just there's something about it that I like a little better. I think maybe it's because I really like Usopp, and he's kind of like one of those characters. While I don't, he doesn't really make it into the main three. He's still it. You know, because he's the one they get next. You kind of feel like, okay, you've got Luffy, Zoro, Nami, and Usopp, and then, you know, there's a little bit of a separation. He feels a bit closer than Sanji does at times and so on, and I like his introduction into the story, and I feel it works really well. It's actually a pretty well-written story up to this point. We can't discuss Volume 4 yet, but Volume 3, I like the setup, where we find out, okay, this is the situation, here's the villain, here's his plan, cliffhanger, how are they going to win, you know?
And I like, they win.
Yeah, and I like the way they put that together. And I think it really works well as such. It may not be everyone's favorite, but I actually really like it. Volume 3 is definitely one of those ones where I just start thinking, okay, yeah, I'm into this series more than I was when I was reading 2. And I think that really works well for me.
But, yeah, I have to agree. It wasn't until Volume 2 where I was going, oh, it's actually good, but then 3, it's like, oh my goodness, good, why I gotta keep reading, but we only supposed to read 3 volumes, like, yeah, fine, just 3 volumes. Keep it together.
Yeah, well, okay, look, dude, if you want to read ahead, I don't mind, because it would probably be easier for us to read ahead rather than, you know, being like, okay, I'll stop here and then I'll pick it up later. Oh, crap, I'm a week late.
Here's the thing. I would read ahead if I had up to volumes. Where is Skype again?
I don't know, in the 20s.
20s? 4, 5, 30? Yeah, if I had the... Okay, maybe I'm thinking about the Skype here, but if I had, like, to the current amount, or even just 50, or 30, or 40, or 100, nice.
There's like... man, there's.
I want them all.
Indeed, I want them all as well. I'm going to try to get as many as I can so we can discuss them.
But yeah, well, what I mean is that, you know, I would read it if I had more because I only have 13 plus volume 21. So by the time I get to it, I'm like, wait, I have to look elsewhere or find some other way to read more.
Yeah, well, you know, there are ways to get the manga.
There are ways.
But...
I know the library.
Exactly. Library. Come on. Library has manga. My library has a ton of One Piece. Definitely go there.
Yeah, then I go look for Volume 14, only 15. Like, wait, where's 14?
Like, why? No,
screwed my plans.
Yeah. No, but yeah, see... yeah, you probably don't want to read too far ahead so you get to
That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, you get to the point where you're like 3 months in ahead and then we come to discuss them like, I don't remember what happened.
That's exactly why I don't want to read ahead.
But still, you know, now that we finished the recording, it's time to start reading the next 3 volumes for next week. So get on that. But this is, yeah, so... I think we've finished our discussion of the volumes, but just at the beginning of our experiment of trying to read and discuss all of One Piece in a row, how do you feel so far about what we're doing? You know, is this going to become burdensome, or is this going to be the most freaking awesome thing you've ever done?
I'll take choice number 2 behind door number 2.
Yeah, damn right. I think it. I mean, it is very likely possible that we will get tired. But so far, just 3 volumes in, I'm thinking, oh, this is gonna be so freaking sweet.
But here's why about One Piece. One Piece, there's so much you can question, and you still cannot even get through 1% of it.
I know. Yes, if we were to go into as much detail per chapter, per volume, as we do when we discuss the most recent chapters, and we don't even go into that much detail compared to other podcasts, we would be here for hours, which I'm sure wouldn't be the most terrible thing, but yeah, there is a lot of material. There's just so much to talk about this series. We probably won't catch everything, but I do feel that this is definitely an undertaking that is worth...
I would like to point some things out of it now.
Yeah, well, still, I feel that this is definitely an undertaking that is worth our time, and not only that, I think it's worth our listeners' time, because I don't know of any podcast that has done anything like this, that has gone through the entirety of One Piece, just volume by volume. We're going to get into an insane amount of detail. We still have to keep the discussion of three volumes to about an hour at a time, but yep. Still, that's an entire hour devoted to three volumes. We could probably do an hour per volume, but that would take even longer, and I don't think anyone has that kind of time.
So that's 20 minutes per volume. Interesting.
Pretty much. That's still a lot of time. And I just think that it is very much something that I'm going to enjoy doing. So far, this beginning stage, promising. Very promising. I like what we got so far. I think that this will be a lot of fun. I hope that people start listening and are able to enjoy this as we go along. We're going to have to make sure that people know that we're doing this. But yeah, for now, three volumes in, very promising start, I find, to what is probably going to be complete insanity. We might have to reach a point where we're like, okay, we just finished the Alabasta arc. Can we take a break for a week or two?
Oh, goodness, the Alabasta arc.
Because that's going to take a long time. Oh, my gosh. Because I've, like, we'll have to talk about it when we get to it. But I was, like, looking at, I saw, like, someone posted a screen thing, just a page from one of the fights in the Alabasta arc. It was the Bon Clay and Sanji fight.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the part that I'd forgotten where he decided, I'm going to make you laugh with this collage of the weirdest facial features, like the weirdest eyes, the weirdest chin, the weirdest mouth, and the weirdest ears, and the weirdest nose. And he's like, ta-da! And he's still got his face except for Usopp's nose.
Oh, yeah.
He's just ta-da, and the next thing you know, he's holding up this mirror, and he's just sobbing. Sanji's like, 90% of that face was just your face.
This is exactly why I want to get as many volumes as possible, so I can just read ahead, and then read it, and then read back again, and then go, yeah. And then you ask me, so... What have you read about this volume? Well, I've read about like six times so far now. What?
Yeah. This is. I mean, I love One Piece, but there are times where I need. Sometimes I just don't get into reading it as much as I should. You know.
Yeah.
I just kind of, you know, get busy. So that's what I love about doing this podcast is we get a chance to sit down and read manga that normally we probably wouldn't read because we're too freaking busy. You know.
It's well, just everyone's friggin' busy.
Yeah, it's just a great moment where it's just, honestly, I recommend any manga fan, you know, do a manga podcast, honestly, because it gives you a chance to really just sit down, analyze manga that you like, read manga that you've been wanting to reread or have been wanting to read at all that you just don't have the time for. It gives you a chance, you know, it gives you a reason for it, and I think it's great. I mean, even if it's a podcast that you don't actually publish anywhere, you know, it doesn't matter if anyone's listening or not, it's just fun to sit down and discuss manga. At times we have moments where we're thinking, oh, I don't want to do this, I'm so tired, and I don't have anything to say, but then there's nothing that compares to talking about a great manga. And that's kind of what this week did for me. We had to take a break at the end of last year rather than do a season 2 finale kind of thing, because we were just, you know, I was tired. I was really, really tired. But I feel that going over One Piece, just remembering how amazing overall, I mean, sure, it's not, there were some parts that weren't as great, but how amazing overall the first three volumes are of this series, and remembering that, hey, I'm enjoying this a lot. This isn't even the best stuff the series has to offer. Just makes me feel like I can do this year, because it is going to be a year of reading the best damn manga around and discussing it. And suddenly I'm just like, this isn't going to be hard. This is going to be fun. I'm going to love this. And yeah, so.
You need to take that kind of attitude and apply to everything else you do.
Yeah, sure.
Work.
Shut up. No, but seriously. This...
Okay, run your book off of them.
Well, yeah, writing a book, that'd be a good idea. That's one thing I need to do. New Year's resolution, finish the damn book. But yeah. Still, also other New Year's resolution, continuing this podcast, because there is nothing quite so fun as reading manga and pretending that you have something important to say about it.
Wait,
they
don't want to know that.
Oh, crap. This is the week of us telling things, saying things we shouldn't. No, but seriously, we're going to go ahead and move on to talk about this week's chapters, but look forward to next week's episode, people, as we continue discussing One Piece and we talk about Fairy Tail, Chapter 34, Volume 34. Sorry, Volume 34, I mean. Because, you know, latest chapter, we need to talk about it, because that's kind of what I want this podcast to be, a podcast where when new volumes come out, we discuss them. And at the moment, I want that to be Fairy Tail, and I want that to be One Piece. It's going to take forever to do One Piece, but we will get there. Eventually, we will be able to discuss the entire, you know, every new volume that we comes out that we buy and read. But for now, we're going to stick with discussing One Piece, and we're going to go several, like a good decade or so into the past to discuss this series. And I hope you enjoyed the discussion of these first three volumes, and we will see you in the next segment as we discuss this week's chapters. We will also see you next week once we come back to this particular segment and discuss the next three volumes of One Piece. So that being said, let's go ahead and move on.
Transition.
Indeed. It's time for the manga commentary section of the podcast, and we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's 11 series for Weekly Shonen Jump Digital, and then that's not even including the other ones that they don't have in here that we review.
The other Weekly Shonen Jump series, and then the Kodansha series is going to take a while, but hopefully we won't go on too long. So, but we need to get moving, so let's start with One Piece Chapter 733, What the Soldier Wants.
All right. We need the color spread.
Yeah, it's a nice color spread. I like it, though.
I have the theme of snowman's getting an upgrade.
Yeah. Do you want to build a snowman?
Or a snow woman?
I don't think that fits in with the song.
Oh, I don't know what the song is.
You should go watch Frozen. It's good.
Ah.
Yes, that is where that song comes from. But yeah, actually, let me open that up again. I want to take a closer look because I remember there was something very suspicious about the snowman and snow woman.
Yes.
Let's see. Okay, yeah. That's interesting. One of them, they gave Luffy's hat. And then the other one looks like, no, it totally straight up looks like Nami.
Her hair. Look at the way her hair is.
Yeah, and she's wearing a crown, which is a bit odd, but okay. And of course, Sanji is giving her ginormous snow breasts. Because Sanji is an irreverent, irredeemable pervert.
Yes.
I don't know why they keep calling Franky the pervert. He just likes to wear Speedos. As they do in certain coastal cities.
Weirdo. It's meant to mean weirdo. Hentai is supposed to mean weirdo, not like, you know.
Then in that case, it seems like it's not being translated properly.
Yeah. You know? Intriguing. Well, pervert just sounds funnier, apparently.
Yes, it does. But I mean, come on, there's nothing perverted about wanting to wear Speedos. At least I don't think.
Like women want to see men wear Speedos.
Yeah, well,
double standards.
Some men they don't. Most men they don't want to see wearing Speedos. Some they welcome it, I imagine.
Well, it's just that some women don't want to see certain women wearing bikini tops because whatever you want. As long as we don't see your junk.
Exactly. Although I feel that gives women an unfair advantage, since they do not have a junk.
Oh.
They have other parts, but not.
We don't want to see your unyoung.
What? This is getting weird. Let's talk about One Piece.
Yes.
Okay. So, Gosh, now, why do your notes focus on Robin's boobs, damn it?
Don't ask me why. I comment what I see.
Well, in that case, I can't really blame you, as they are quite prominent.
Your fault for not taking your notes. I took my notes, and I actually went through this. I went through the 11 series twice.
Good work.
Twice.
Yeah, so this chapter, it kind of feels like not that much. I mean, stuff happened, but nothing that really particularly stands out much, you know?
It seems like Oda's doing this whole, this happens, and you're wondering what's happening next, you need to find out next few chapters. Maybe next chapter is like,
yeah.
That's good. He puts cliffhangers in a cliffhanger before the cliffhanger even happens.
Yo, dog. No, but...
I heard you like cliffhangers.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this is very much a chapter that nothing major happens, but at the same time, it is very much... It's still a One Piece chapter. It's still really good, and there are some really amusing moments, like when the Tontadas, you know, strip down those guys, steal their clothes for Robin and Usopp, and then they just smash them into the ground. And I'm like, how are these guys still alive?
Because they can't do that, that's why.
Yeah, and we also get to see that the toy soldier, actually knows how to fight.
Oh, yeah. I get it now.
Yeah. Yes, that is the...
I get it now!
But yeah, I really like that scene. I think that's the part of this chapter that really stood out for me. Mostly because, one, we get to see that he actually is a fighter. You know, he can actually fight. But secondly, we also get to see how Rebecca learned how to fight. And that she wasn't, I want to learn how to fight. She was like, I don't want to learn how to fight. But she still had to, and now she is pretty strong. Yep. And we also find out that there is a bit of a time limit. Well, not time limit. It's more I don't know what the exact name for it would be.
Expiration date?
That works, yeah. Yeah, the toy soldier is, you know, he can fight, but he's in a toy body, and toys are not meant to be durable.
He's been like that for a long time.
Yeah, so it means that the more he fights, the more he runs the risk of being broken. And do you remember if in the flashback, if he had one leg or two legs? I think he just still had one.
He only had one leg, so...
Okay, so that already happened earlier, probably when he was trying to save his wife. All right, but yeah, overall, this was a good chapter. I mean, nothing really groundbreaking that we need to... focus on or, you know,
a little bit at the end going, everyone's down for the count. Who's going to get up? And I'm like, I'm looking around like, wait, where's that mummy guy?
What? Shishio is there?
No.
Oh.
He's a sorcerer, but where's that? I was like, where's that mummy guy? He's not here in the fallen. I'm like, what the?
Interesting. Well, someone's...
I don't think Rebecca's going to be standing up. Maybe she might, but...
Yeah, well, someone is standing up and... We don't really see who it is. Let me see if I can get a closer look at that. Yeah, we did have... Well, I did do want to mention that we got to see a little more of the other... You know, all the other fighters. But let's see. Whoever... Yeah, we don't get to even see close to whoever's standing
there. If Cavendish stood up. It's like, hey, look, an eagle. So you have to fight, quote-unquote, Lucy. And... And find out, wait, you're not the one? Oh, hey, what's up?
Yeah. I just realized listening to another podcast that it's totally possible that the person that whose face we didn't get to see is Bon Clay.
Oh, boy.
Except that would be such a tease because we already know he's alive. We saw it from one of the cover pages. But Luffy didn't know that, and it could totally pull off the... Oh, yeah. It's like, didn't know he was... I thought he was dead. And it totally worked, except the one part that doesn't work is the fact that it focuses on, you know, the Ace's grave and the three things of sake, so...
Yes, the end part, that could have worked.
Probably not Bon Clay, but if it was Bon Clay, I would laugh so freaking hard.
According to one cover chapter, you know, throughout when the time skip started, after the time skip started, we had we had him being shown as the new queen of New Kama Land.
So he probably hasn't left. But All right. Let's go ahead and talk about Naruto chapter 660, One's True Heart.
It was good.
It was all right. This was the one with, I'm trying to remember. This was the one where we got Shukaku's background. Yeah, my one problem is that I have a hard time accepting him as supposed to be one of the good guys now, because the entirety of his existence in the manga has been, this is this great evil force that has threatened a young child and said, if you ever fall asleep, and they even mentioned it in this chapter, but if you ever fall asleep, I will take over and I will kill everything. And I'm like, this is the guy we're supposed to suddenly be rooting for? We're supposed to suddenly believe that Gaara has any other emotion besides utter and distinct hatred for this guy? Why is Gaara trying to defend him? The Shukaku never did anything good for him beyond ruining his entire life.
True.
So why is he suddenly being like Naruto is, like, oh, I'm going to protect you because we're comrades or something. And I'm like, that doesn't work. I mean, we get a little bit of development for Shukaku, but that still doesn't trump the fact that, hey, he was threatening a little child and made his life miserable. And nonetheless, we don't even get to see why Gaara suddenly decided that Shukaku isn't the bane of his existence anymore.
I guess you don't care about the old guy that Shukaku remembers that reminded Gaara of him.
That doesn't make a difference to me. That honestly doesn't make a difference. Because we have the entire, it's the entire manga versus this one chapter. I'm not going to change my mind based on just a single chapter. It's Shukaku was an evil presence and suddenly supposed to be a good guy without a proper explanation. And
I seriously wonder how you find these things that I can't see. I just look at it from a surface view, but you look at it like below the surface and like, aha, I find something, this is not right.
I guess I spent too much time thinking about this series, but I mean,
you spent too much time.
Yeah, the chapter was okay, but there are some.
I didn't understand
issues.
The last part. I was like, wait, what the heck is going on with Naruto? What the hell are they saying? Why is he going on this eyes bulging out? I'm like,
yeah, it does look like Naruto just lost Kurama.
Yeah,
like he got ripped out, which doesn't make sense because Madara was supposed to rip them out. It was supposed to take them by their number of tails, so it was like 1, 2, 3, and so on.
I'll just work backwards.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, does that work? But yeah, it does look like it. I did like that cliffhanger because it's probably going to be explained that, oh no, just part of the chakra. Most of the chakra is pulled out, but the nine tails is still inside him or something, because if the nine tails really did get pulled out of him, Naruto's going to die. Like, really going to die. So That'd be kind of an interesting twist, and oh gosh, after that comment posted by Kishimoto saying he'd always been thinking of having Sasuke be the Hokage, this is how.
I'm still not sure that's true, but when I saw it on Facebook on one of these on this Facebook group I was part of, strictly only for a certain ethnicity group, sorry people, but I was like, I'm like, why? Okay, I'm like, okay, it's one thing for people who don't write the manga to spoil, it's another thing for the creator of said manga to spoil.
Well, it wasn't really that spoilery. It was more just, here, this is my general idea for the rest of this year. And it's basically Kishimoto saying he's planning on ending the series soon. And he's been, I don't know, it could be that it could be that his comment of, I've always been thinking of Sasuke, making Sasuke being the Hokage or something, could be a spoiler. But if it is legitimately what he's planning to do, then this guy doesn't know a damn thing about writing manga, because
we were here with Naruto. Naruto wants to be Hokage, and then suddenly someone else becomes Hokage.
The only way I could see that happening is if Kishimoto kills off Naruto, which I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, that doesn't seem impossible anymore. And if that is what happens, more than any of the shipping bull crap, this will make me rage quit. And I'll just be like, you know what? This was a waste of my life, of years of my life. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to Toriko, chapter 263.
World's best gourmet hunter.
Yeah, now here's a weird thing. At the beginning of the series, we heard that Toriko had discovered, like, more new foods than anyone else, but then the entire series was him being told, hey, there's this food you've never heard about, but yeah, I totally know about it. You know, where it makes him look like a complete beginner, as opposed to this guy that has gone and discovered more new foods than anyone else, including Ichiru. And suddenly I'm just like, why could we never see something like that, where he goes out, discovers something new without someone telling him, oh yeah, go here to find the Century Super. Go here to find this one specific vegetable.
That's true. He's always been going because someone's telling him to go find it. Why can't we?
Yeah. And then we see this chapter. We have a bunch of people that bring him foods that he's discovered and tell him how much it's changed their lives. So somehow the guy that says, hey, you discovered this and I like to have it as a snack when I'm drinking, somehow that doesn't feel quite so important after the one woman whose child was allergic to every food except this one kind that Toriko discovered.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of thinking, how could someone be allergic to every food?
That's not even possible.
Yeah, that doesn't seem possible. I mean, maybe it is possible. I honestly don't know much.
I mean, there is someone allergic to water, but, you know, that's just person allergic to water. I'm sorry for that person, but allergic to every freaking food except some freaking, yes, water.
Water?
Water.
How?
I don't know.
They're H2O. Made of water.
I know, H2O, man. What the heck? And seriously, they're breathing. If water, oxygen is all over. That person's freaking going to be suffering no matter what.
That is so
weird. It's probably on the head.
Yeah, though, I have to wonder, where did all these people come from that they suddenly are all like, oh, hey, Toriko, we need to tell you about all the things that you've accomplished. Make you feel better.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's like this entire chapter feels like a cheesy action adventure flick where the hero's fallen down in hard times and has moved back on his feet thanks to meeting random strangers who motivate him to fight again.
Except it's a flash mob of random strangers that motivate him to fight again. And I mean, it does work, but I didn't notice this at first, but I'm looking at it again and I see that Rin is, well, I saw Rin before, but I didn't notice that when she's standing off in the background kind of like that, she's holding a phone. So I think she probably, I think what we're supposed to take away from this is that she actually, you know, called all these people and had them, you know, come to help cheer Toriko up, which...
Wow, he called them? Wow.
Yeah, which I'm like, wait, how did she know all these people, specific people that were affected by Toriko's discovery, unless she is some kind of super stalker? Where it's like, I will know everything about Toriko, even the random people that are influenced by his work.
Oh boy!
Seems like a bit much, but at the same time, if it is true that she was the one that organized this, then and had all these people come in, then I actually like this chapter a lot better because I had a really big hang up.
Oh yeah, I see the phone.
Yeah, I had a really big hang up with the whole, oh, these people randomly show up and they start talking to Toriko, and it's this really cheesy and schmaltzy, and I'm just thinking, why? How did they know? But if it is meant to be, Rin called them all and had them all bring the food and, you know, tell Toriko how much it meant for them, then, yeah, that I can totally buy. So, yeah, this is amazing. You know, this is a series that sometimes you just have to read it more than once.
But I read it twice and I still didn't catch that part.
I was kind of looking at it and thinking, this chapter doesn't work for me for this reason. Then I looked through it again and I was like,
I didn't see her holding the phone. I was like, wait.
Well, I remember seeing her hold the phone at first, but I didn't connect it until just now. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's what she could be holding the phone for.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it looks like Toriko's going to be moving on to the gourmet world. And
he's pretty much issued a challenge to those 18. Because like, he throws his fork and it's like traveling around the world. The fork can travel around the world.
Yeah, the first...
And they're all like catching them or something.
Yeah, those aren't those other creatures. I don't think they're the eight kings. The only one of the eight kings we see is the, you know, the battle wolf.
Oh, which, yeah, the battle wolf.
Dude, that thing looks badass. But yeah, it's funny seeing all the different creatures with all their power levels, because some of these power levels have become meaningless.
It's not over 9,000 yet.
Yeah. Where it's like, no, 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 it is. It's into the tens of thousands.
Oh,
with some of them. Good. It's oh, yeah. Right. I mean, wasn't, well, I can't remember what was.
But the battle was like 6,000 though.
No, no, it was much higher than that. Let me.
You sure? I saw 6,000.
Well, okay, let's see, 290.
I'm eating rich right now because, man, I need snacks, okay?
Man, well, take it out of the package before we start talking. Okay, actually, I think you might. No, you're right. It was the Battle Wolf was 6,000. So not over 9,000 yet, but.
Told you.
Still huge. I could have sworn I saw it even higher. Oh, it was the stupid comma getting in the way. Anyway, yeah, I. Hmm. Yeah, I have to say. It is kind of a bit silly having, you know, how powerful they've gotten when I think, well, was it a capture level 1 meant that it took 10 men with rifles to take the creature down?
Oh, man, I might as well still remember that. Okay.
Yeah, well, the power levels are so silly that it's like, I have to remember that. But, yeah, I also like the little bit where it's talking about, you know, does the whole, oh, there's a beast whose whole body is moist and sweet like pudding and it secretes a meaty juice like caramel. Right. And, you know, the part where, and there's a place where enough chilled fuzzy cola gushes forth to fill a whole sea. I like, and then it goes on to this, like, exists the king of all foods, God. And I like the way it does that because the manga never actually did that. That was totally just something the anime always did at the beginning of every episode. And so, yeah, I like that. It sort of ties things from the anime back in, and it sort of, it's a good place to leave off as we're going into this month-long break with Toriko going into the gourmet world. And so it feels nice. It feels very much like seeing Toriko enthusiastic like this again is very much a good, you know, a good place to start up a new, basically a new chapter in this story of Toriko. So, yeah, I like this chapter. It was a good chapter. A very good chapter, in fact.
It was.
Yep. All right, well, should we go on and talk about Seraph of the End, Chapter 8?
Yes. Let's just move on.
Yeah. Yeah, this series. Let's not waste too much time on this, but... Yeah, so, basically, well, what it is nice that they have abandoned the pretense that this is a high school series. Thank you.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm getting really tired. And World Trigger gets a pass on this, but I am getting tired of these stories where you've got armies made up of children.
Oh, yes.
You know, last time I checked, that wasn't a good thing.
Attack on Titan.
Well,
this series.
Okay. Attack on Titan. How old are they? They're like, what, 16, 17?
Really?
I don't know. They're older teenagers, which in a medieval type society, that makes sense, you know? Because by around the time you're 14 to 16, that's when you're considered an adult in medieval societies. However,
you're a man, boy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, however, it is difficult when, I mean, the 16 to 18 year old range, that's okay, but when it's the 13 to 16-year-old range, that's problematic right there, you know? Because last time I checked, there was a little something called the Children's Crusade, and that's not even the first or the last of when making an army of children was a bad idea.
Wait. Crusaders did that?
Well, it was... I won't get into the details, but basically there was a crusade... There was, like, this one crazy person, and I think it was, like, a kid as well. It was, like, this crazy kid, or I can't remember the exact details. But basically, a crusade of nothing but children got organized. They marched on the Holy Land, and then they got lost. And then most of them either died or got sold into slavery.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. I read about that somewhere. I'm like...
Yeah, exactly. Stupid. Not a good idea, and I don't know. It's overall this... whole concept of there's an army and there's children fighting in the army, and it's not meant to be set in the 11th century. It's straight up, this is modern times, except a little bit in the future. And I'm like, just thinking, so what? Why are you having these children fight monster.
We should make that a topic time. Why is it that they have children in, make an army of children in manga? Why does it?
Well, yeah, I think the main reason is because the readers are supposed to be children, so they want them to be able to relate to the characters, but at the same time they want to tell a military story kind of deal, which just doesn't work like that. Anyway, the new character is annoying. Moving on.
Moving on.
Nisekoi bonus chapter. Yeah, so
I gotta admit that was kind of funny. How they were like, okay, how basically they were like, okay, we're gonna take all of our clothes and you know bund them together because if we leave them around, the monkeys will steal them. Like the sign says, monkeys will steal your around. I'm like, yeah, monkeys. And then they're like trying to be smart, bundle all their clothes together in one giant ball of whatever, and then
to make it harder to steal, you know.
But then a bunch of monkeys could just get smart and go, oh look, hey Bob, get over here. Hey, call Joe, call Larry, call Tim, call Tommy, call George, call what's his name? Get over here.
Man, that George, he's always too curious for his own good. Like we'll make him he'll be sleeping with the fishes. No, but yeah, I get the point. I don't know if monkeys can organize themselves quite that well, but nonetheless, it ends up with their clothes shot into the air by a geyser, and it lands right in the middle of.
Is that how you say the word?
Geyser, I guess. I think it's geyser, actually.
I say geyser.
Yeah.
Or
but
geyser.
Anyway, it ends up stuck in a tree in the middle of the men's hot springs. And so the girls, all completely naked, by the way, end up having to try and get their clothes back. And they're trying to sneak around Raku, which personally I just would have been like, you know, call for him while hiding behind a rock. And it's like, hey, you see our clothes there? Funny story. Could you get those for us and then look away?
Because he's not really even a pervert compared to the other one.
I mean, it's not like he'd try to do.
I'm not talking about Shu. I'm talking about someone else from another series.
Yeah, but he's still, it's like, you know, it's not like he's going to try something. He'd be embarrassed. They'd be embarrassed that he knows about it. Maybe that's why they're not doing it. They don't want him to know what happened. But it ends up with them all completely prostrated naked afore him. Which, is kind of embarrassing. And then,
it's really funny when Marika, her eyes are like sparkling.
Everyone's terrified, and she's like, "Woo!" I do like how, for the majority of this chapter, it's about how, oh hey, you know, Raku isn't in the wrong here. He's done nothing wrong, but we're all just, you know, hiding and. If he discovers us, we'll beat him up, which is what happens. But still, it's
standards.
But still, at the same time, he actually, you know, he's, you know, completely innocent more than ever before. And he's not even in a situation where anyone seeing it would be like, oh, you pervert. No, it's totally their fault. Except he ends up getting beaten up because, you know, they still don't want him to remember what happened.
And then the last bit was Shu. He was trying to climb to where they were, apparently, or something.
Yeah. I was very... Yeah, I really... this chapter was, well, for the one part, I mean, excessive fan service, good gosh. But still, Nisekoi manages to have can do chapters like this while still, you know, while still being... having something else there for people that aren't complete perverts, you know, it just has an actual story there, and it's manages to pretend to not be a complete excuse for having a bunch of teenage girls naked, which it still does that, but it doesn't have that be the only thing the chapter is about, which is kind of
nice. Called shonen for a reason.
Giggity, but yeah. Okay, let's move on to One Punch Man.
Chapter 31, Part 2 from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
so the headquarters is the sturdiest.
Don't say
building.
It. Yeah, this was... this was a good chapter. There wasn't really much for me to really focus on. It was more, hey, great art, good action scenes, but not much meat to it. You know,
No. Well, for me, it's more like when I mentioned how the headquarters is really sturdy and it didn't get damaged even a bit.
Yeah.
Other than the entire outside of city, you know, other than City A itself outside is all wiped out. And I'm like, so you heroes, you know, you're alive, but you can't protect people that you're trying to help. So what's the point?
Yeah, there's a lot of people dead. There's a lot of people dead here, more so than what happened in Superman, in Man of Steel.
Oh boy!
But yeah, it was kind of neat seeing Saitama just punching a giant bullet.
He kicked it.
Well, yeah, kicked it.
He
but
kicked it.
How dare he kick? He is one punch man, not one kick man.
Oh yeah.
Oh well, but yeah, still, it was a good chapter, but not that much to really discuss, per se. I mean, Eiron, the dude with the armor and the sword, that doesn't make any sense for that armor, loses his arm, so he's in deep trouble.
Well, then again, come to think, I was going to mention, having a katana while wearing armor in Zion Hunt would be good, but then again, that turned into a zombie, that'd be a bad idea.
True. Very true.
Oh, yeah. Let's just say that he lost his left arm and he's going to be F unless somebody gets there to help him out or something. Because that thing is tough and disturbingly scary.
Yeah, it is quite freaky.
It's
freaky. Yeah. This definitely does feel like reading a movie, even more so than, you know, Kubo's art style.
Which we can get to next.
Indeed. Bleach chapter 563, Superstars Never Die.
I don't want to remember this chapter.
I don't care what you say. This character is amazing. It's like he's so broken, but it's so perfect that it doesn't matter that he's able to bring James back and have them basically tiny Jameses come forth from the ruins of James's corpse.
Jamestown.
It's just perfect. Just this random luchador wrestler who is just... the series needs to be about him, honestly. This is amazing.
This pretty much explains, you know, the whole Spanish thingy with the, you know, Rantor and all that.
Yeah, except for this guy's supposed to be German-themed.
Well, if you ask me, if you know that most of the characters aren't even freaking German. One of them was Chinese, I think, and the other was some guy with a weird name. I think is probably
they all have weird names.
Mid Asia or something.
Like
the Indian area, because that's what his name seems like. I can't. It's like trying to pronounce Apu Nahasapina Pata.
Nahasapima Pedalon.
I hate you.
Indeed. But, yeah, so, and it looks like Renji has a power-up to his Bankai, because we see the skull of his skeletal snake Bankai thingy, but it seems to be attached to his arm.
It was hard to tell. It was like, wait, 2 pages.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see for next chapter to see what they're doing with that.
I can't believe you like the wrestler, dude.
Oh come on, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he is hilarious, but that freaking design of him wearing that.
Oh yeah, the
I'm like, what the heck is it? Like, oh god. Oh no, I don't want to.
Come on.
That looks so stupid.
Alright.
Honestly, Kubo's like, you know what, I don't give a crap anybody what's saying, he says, I'm just draw this.
Yeah.
So thanks, readers, thanks everyone for realizing Bleach was, you know, going down. No, executive. Thanks, executive, for doing this so Kubo can go wild and crazy and we can actually appreciate that fact instead of like, holding back on us every time.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about World Trigger Chapter 45, Invasion Part 2.
So the new thing just captures Trigger users. Yeah, they're bone.
Pretty much, yeah. I like how they're able to make this invasion actually seem like a legitimate threat without resorting to, the people will actually die. I mean, people are dying and everything, but the agents, and I mean, we even see one of the agents being shot in the head as a means of escape, You know, so them dying doesn't mean just means that, oh, they end up back in this other place. But actually seeing them be captured is big enough of a threat that, you know, it makes this actually seem really tense, and it makes the threat seem really legitimate. So I'm looking forward to this fight more than a lot more than I was before. I mean, I was still looking forward to it, but now that I see that they actually know how to make it seem threatening, I'm actually have some pretty high hopes.
Oh, so you die if your Shion loses? Well, you just capture you, and so that way you'll always we'll remain in limbo while we like torture you and stuff. Like, oh crap! Oh crap! Oh crap!
Pretty much, yeah. And they're capturing the triggers and everything. So
this is why being immortal is never a good thing. You can think you won't die, but then people can just torture you to contort you for all eternity or some way or other.
Crap! I didn't think this through. Yeah, this was a good chapter. I liked it.
This makes it hard to like write a dang story when you think about these dungeons. Like, wait, if they're immortal, what's the point of them doing all this stuff if they're gonna be like, you know,
Yeah, you have to think of a way around it.
Yeah, always think of a way around it.
Yep, but all right, let's go ahead and talk about Nisekoi chapter 105, Tanabata. Yes,
actual chapter.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that I see that. You know, Onodera's mom actually forgave Raku so quickly after she completely hated him for the cake
Okay,
shot.
Go get that boy. I'll be rooting for you from behind.
Yeah, that was really amusing. And this was possibly my favorite Onodera chapter.
Yeah.
Mostly just because it really does take the whole, she's the plain nice girl, but it actually makes her incredibly funny. I mean, she's had some funny chapters before, but the other ones weren't as good as this one. This really allows her to shine.
Plus, it gave her some sort of a character other than the whole, oh, I like this guy, and you know, you want him. No, see.
Yeah, except that's what the entire chapter was focused on.
That is true.
I think it is. Overall, just the entire flow of everything was great. The having her, you know, try to hide her wish.
And then asking the other girl what their wish is.
I think, what was it?
Paula?
No, not Paula. Well, Paula's was entertaining, but I was thinking more of, why is her name escaping me?
Which one was it? Oh, Marika?
Marika. Marika's was... Yeah, that was just like, it's like a one wish per person. It's like, what, but I have all of these. It was like, oh gosh. Yeah, and it is, and for the most part, it, you know, I just, even though it is very much she's just doing it because she wants the guy, which, okay, fair enough. But then I like the part at the end when she sees Raku's wish and decides, you know, to wish that his wish comes true, and then it actually happens. And I'm like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, at the same time, I'm just like, wait, why did she have to have her name on it on the first one, but on the second one, she could make it anonymous?
Well, maybe it's because if it's anonymous, then they can't tell who... Wait, that's true. Wait, what?
Well, actually, I think it works since the wish was... that Raku's wish comes through, nobody would need to know that it was her wishing for it. So I guess
true,
that works.
True.
But still, minor quibbles, I'd
say. I didn't catch that part. That was actually pretty good then.
Yeah.
But yeah. I did like the part that she decided to, you know, hey, I don't want to wish just to become his girlfriend. I actually want to make that happen myself. But okay, go for it.
Yep, and she did. And that was, it was nice. It all comes together nicely, and I really like this chapter.
Yep, I like it too.
Yep, let's go ahead and talk about Blue Exorcist chapter 53. I'll kill you in your sleep.
My response, I'll kill you while I sleep before you kill me before I sleep.
What?
Nobody kills me while I sleep.
Yeah, so, character poll.
I don't understand why number one and two... I mean, okay, maybe Japan probably does, but I don't understand why.
I don't understand Japan, honestly. I don't understand any of the Japanese readers, because how the hell is Yukio... number one? Seriously, are they reading a different series than we're reading? is...
Isn't his voice actor the same as Satsuki or something?
Well, that's a strike against him, but it shouldn't really matter. Just going off the manga, he hasn't done anything that would make me think he's anything but a bit of a douchebag. So why is he... I don't know. I guess people appreciate the whole, he's a hard worker and he's diligent more, as opposed to Rin's the free spirit. But still, he's kind of a jerk.
Yes.
Oh, well. But anyway, the actual story. So, yeah, one woman manages to...
We get more of the story about Yuzuru's past.
Pretty much, and it's messed up, but I'm really distracted by that character design for that freaking scientist guy. I mean,
Dr. Gedon.
Yeah, that was a really bad design choice. I mean, seriously, we're meant to automatically be like, oh, this guy's creepy and he's a jerk. But still, I'm just looking at it and I'm like, I'm so distracted by the fact that this is clearly meant to be a pedophile. This was not a good design choice because now I can't focus on anything else in this damn chapter. And I mean, it's all dark and, oh, hey, we're going to have this one person who's trying to help, but then when push comes to shove, you know, she tries to save herself instead of, you know, the kids. But, you know, I was completely distracted and I couldn't think of anything besides how terrible this design choice was. Well, did you have anything to add to it, or should we just move on? Because this was a disturbing chapter and I don't really have anything specific to talk about.
Please, I hope someone killed this guy.
Well, they probably...
Gedon. Not you, the only one. Gedon.
They probably will.
Big Doctor Doom.
Indeed.
No, he won't die, Noah, because I know these characters like them won't die. They'll just, like, well, he'll probably suffer badly, but he won't die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Heat it.
Indeed. All right.
Moving on.
Dragon Ball Z, Chapter 46, Monkey in the Moon.
Monkey in the Moon.
It feels like it needs to be a song.
It does feel like it needs a song. Okay, so my first impression of this chapter. It was actually kind of pretty funny, because I read the first time, I was like, okay, and then I read the second time, I was like, wait, it feels like... It feels like Vegeta was like trying to be made the hero. Basically, Gohan transformed, but the entire chapter made it feel like Vegeta was trying to defeat these guys on this planet and stop this little kid from turning into a giant space monkey that wiped out the entire universe.
Well, it was his
fault.
Yes,
I just said that. I feel like Vegeta was the hero here.
Yeah, well, he got humiliated and got knocked out by a naked kid.
But he cut the tail off, though.
Yeah, but then he still got crushed, and he was just on the border, and he was about to get completely wiped out.
And then he retreated.
Yep, he has to retreat.
Smart choice, though, because then he'd be like, I'm not going to run away.
Yeah.
Kill you all.
Indeed. Yep, I like this chapter. It was entertaining, and the fight is finally over. So we'll go from here with a bit more plot.
And that felt pretty short. Not as long, but not as short either, though.
Yeah, it was over pretty quick.
Although it did feel like a while since we saw the others, Piccolo, Yamcha, and the other guys are dead now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so it is. I mean, the fight did go on for a while, but not nearly as long as it did in the anime. So much easier if you're going to enjoy Dragon Ball, you need to actually read the manga.
Yeah.
Alright, so this week there were no Beelzebub or Assassination Classroom chapters, which is a bit of a shame, but we do have Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 53.
The man who came from a cold country. Is it Russia?
No, it specifically mentions Northern Europe.
So it's probably Finland or Norway?
Norway, Sweden, possibly Iceland. It could Denmark still counts as Northern Europe.
Denmark. So. It could be Denmark.
Yeah, he's probably Scandinavian. Which, okay, that works. But I would just like to, although I would like to point out, they decided that they weren't going to put Shokugeki no Soma in Weekly Shonen Jump because it's too risque. then why did you publish that Nisekoi chapter? That's more risque than it. Well, not really more risque, but pretty darn close to the level of Shokugeki no Soma. And certainly more risque than anything we see in this chapter.
Shokugeki no Soma would seem more tame. I guess for them it's like, in the imagination, like looking at the people, oh my goodness, food.
Yeah.
Bullet starts with a P, ends with an N.
Yeah, so we start off this chapter finding out that the scoring is a lot harsher.
Yeah.
On this side, with barely anyone breaking like 10 points, and then wait a minute, Coral Kiba Ryo. Why did they say she found him in Northern Europe, but he's Japanese?
I don't know. Everybody seems to be half Japanese here. The Italian guy seems to know Japanese for some reason.
I mean, it makes sense. There are Asians and Japanese in Europe. But still, it's just like, you managed to find this one cooking prodigy in a Northern European country, and he just happened to be Asian. That feels like we don't actually really want to have foreigners in our manga. We want people to be from a foreign country, but they have to be Japanese. Which, I mean, even the Italian kids are like half Japanese, and I'm like, dude, I mean...
Japan, get your pottery set. If you either like foreigners or you don't like foreigners.
Yeah, it feels kind of annoying whenever someone's like, oh, Western media doesn't have enough diversity. And I'm like, dude, go complain to the Japanese. They can barely have characters that aren't Japanese. Even when they are foreigners, they're actually Japanese.
Yeah, and yet they use, like, you know, Western, or they use non-Japanese stuff in it. It's like, what the heck? Come on now.
It's weird. Yeah, it's,
I mean,
like,
Chinese is fine because Japanese kind of descend from Chinese, but yeah. Other than that, I don't know. Yeah,
it is very weird, certainly, where it's like, oh, we want to take ideas from these other countries, but we don't want anything to do with the actual people, is what this feels like. I mean, that may not be true. Maybe it's just they don't want to have a foreigner's name that's really hard to pronounce for them. Maybe that's
Foreigners, it's really hard to pronounce it. They put them in there anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, this was still a good chapter because Ryo comes in and everyone's, you know, and he does, you know, and it was kind of a little uncomfortable with that one woman who was all, oh, it's like, I will grade these as if they were professionals and none of this food is satisfactory. And she's all, oh, it's like a seafood... a curry, it's not even worth my time, and she tries it, and suddenly it's like, oh gosh, this is a very sensualized chapter, shall we say.
She turned into a nymph.
Yeah, but it doesn't really even, you know, have excessive, you know, fan service or anything like that. It's just more like she, you know, it's just the expressions and the way he's like, oh, I know you want to eat this and you have to and whatnot, is like he's like forcing you to eat it. It's kind of uncomfortable. And I don't know whether... I'm not so sure whether I'd eat lobster brain. I mean...
Slurp it, you mean. It's slurp it. Yeah. I mean, we've already seen the monkey brain from Indiana Jones and...
That doesn't count. Nobody actually eats that. I guess someone might eat lobster brain, but... Yeah.
Slurp it.
Stop that. I hate that word.
I don't care.
It's stupid scanlators. They choose the wrong words 90% of the time. That's a nasty word. Don't use it. Anyway, this was an alright chapter. We get to see how strong Ryo actually is, and despite some of the uncomfortable elements.
But, well, he is Alta's aide for that reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we get to see where they first meet, so that was nice. But speaking of uncomfortable, Fairy Tale Chapter 365, Fairy in the Jail. Also known as Mashima, what the hell?
Also known as Mashima is kind of doing what Matsuenda is doing in Sunday.
Yeah, it's...
Well, he's been doing, but he's trying to break out of it. Like, no, you can't go this far. Like, fine, I'll just...
Yeah, it... Okay. Yeah, so essentially what we have, we start off with Natsu realizing that the former chairman is a traitor, and he goes to track them down, and then we see Erza is being kept in a prison, and she has been completely stripped down.
Not to mention that she has these magic cuffs that bind her magic, so she can't, you know, cover herself even with normal clothing because it requires magic.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's, it's a very grungy little dungeon cell, and it's really uncomfortable.
It's meant to. It's meant to be like a. From what I read, it's meant to be like a psy, like a psy, psy, like a psychot. Not psychotic. You know, on the psyche. Like basically, you.
Well, psychological. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we also find out that Mira Jane is being transformed into one of the demons, and for some reason she needs to be naked for that as well. And, yeah, so basically, oh, what's the demon lady's name?
Kyokai.
Right, so Kyokai. So basically she reveals that Jalal was the last, he's the last living member of, former member of the council that... That, well, he doesn't know, but he's the one that, he's the last remaining one that is the seal on mm-hmm. the, on face. And if they kill him, then, you know, the seal is broken. And he doesn't know that. They're trying to find out where he is. And so she uses this magic that amplifies the pain receptors for Urza and basically tortures her.
Yeah, that magic could be used for some other reason than pain.
And yeah, it was... Shut up, Mo. Shut up. No, but it is very uncomfortable. It's like extreme torture chapter. And I don't know, the first part where she does something to Urza is a little weird because you don't see where the hand is, except you see that it's low. So you're just like, what did... Bad touch.
Bad touch.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, move on. So we find out... Yeah, let's move on from this uncomfortable topic.
It's hard not to. It's the entire chapter.
Yeah, well, we find out the actual names of the Aura Sionsei. Midnight is my... I'm not going to say the name because there's this whole curse thing on saying the name outside the play.
It's the Scottish play, thank you very much.
I know, I don't like that. I'm not a play person, but I don't want to say anyway. Anyways, It's named after a famous play by Shakespeare.
Yeah, you just have to say it's the Scottish play and people will get it.
It's the Scottish play, that there one, yeah. So the next one is, and Razor's real name is Sawyer. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Tom Sawyer for some reason. Cobra's Eric, that's pretty cool. And you're Sorano, and we know Hot Eye is Richard, but, well, for Brain Zero, I get
dead.
So we don't know. Yeah. We'll never know a real name, but we don't care. I don't like that guy.
Yeah, and then Natsu finds them, and he finds them really fast.
He finds Tartarus, not these guys.
yeah, he finds Tartarus, which is kind of like, oh, wow, that was kind of fast, but you know what? I'm not going to complain in this case, because we need to stop this uncomfortable torture porn here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let's wait until see it explode, seeing his two
friends.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he manages to actually save them because he might be at a bit of a disadvantage here.
And Happy, no jokes about this, please. I swear.
Oh, yeah, that would. I'd be like, I'm going to kill something.
But, I'm going to strangle that cat.
Yeah. So, Seven Deadly Sins, Chapter 60, A Creeping Chaos.
Yeah, so did you know that Grimoire was that guy's son? I didn't know that.
I thought that it was mentioned before, but I wasn't certain.
I don't remember reading. I don't remember like most of the series. I mean, I like it, but it's just there's so much to get from it. It's kind of like how it's almost like One Piece in a way. I have to say,
yeah, there's
so much to gather out of.
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of content in this chapter. I think the most important things is that. Princess Margaret is against the Holy Knights. That's pretty clear. And she is, you know, she is same as Elizabeth on the side of the Seven Deadly Sins, who she considers to be the, you know, the most loyal knights.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, yeah, that's kind of interesting. And then we find out that Gila possibly realizes who that monster's head was.
Thanks to Jericho.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it turns out that Hendrickson and Helbrum are trying to...
Other war.
Yeah, well, they're trying to bring demons back into the world to cause an eternal war, which I'm like, you know, it's like...
We're knights, we don't want our sword of wrath, we want to action, we don't want to stay there pretend. I'm like, dude, reason you do this is so you can get peace. If you freaking ruin that peace, what's the point of being a freaking holy knight in the first place?
Well, they're warriors. They want war. It makes sense to me.
That's true.
And then Meliodas decides he wants to get his broken sword back, but it looks like the, only one that would possibly be on his side is
Elizabeth.
No, not Elizabeth.
Oh,
dang it!
What?
These should be easy names to remember. Giant girl.
Diane.
Diane. That's why it's hard to remember.
How can you not remember her? I thought you liked her.
I don't know why I can't remember that name.
Okay,
I don't remember names well, okay?
Meliodas.
I don't need you to do that. I remember the other names. Okay, it's just that one. I don't know why. It's
okay, back to those holy knights. If they want to call, if they want work, why don't they just turn to Vikings? That makes it easier for all of us.
Well, except for the people that they're raiding and pillaging and raping. Not so great there. No, but, I mean, I guess they want it to be like an ongoing war, you know, forever, because bring demons back and the war will be eternal, basically. So, which, that makes sense to me. It's, I mean, if you're fighting another country, it's not the same thing. But, yeah. All right.
Now, we can finally go into something that, you can want to go into, but it took a while because he had to read it first.
Well, yes, but I watched the anime and then I read the manga from there. Attack on Titan. We're going to start talking about it. And we won't go into much detail. We'll have to find some time to talk about this series as a whole. But needless, just my quick impressions of it is there are parts that are just really silly about this series, you know?
Yeah.
Like the whole, oh, by the way, we're going to reveal who the bad guys are, the actual bad guys are, but we're going to do it in the background of this panel when, you know, you're supposed to be paying attention to this other conversation. But, yeah, that was silly. All right, but we'll get into that in more detail as we cover the volumes whenever we manage to do that.
But, I don't know what you're talking about, okay.
Yeah. Oh, you know, where we when we find out who, and I'm not going to say who it is, but we find out who the Colossal and Armored Titans are.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
That was silly. It was just randomly in the background. It was like, oh, hey, by the way, we're the Colossal and the Armored Titans. It was like, wait, what? Is this a joke? But
we're not joking.
Well, let's talk about Chapter 53, the chapter for this month. This chapter is...
It's pretty informative, like the whole thing about Aaron can transform to the Titan more and more now. But the problem is, it depends on the environment apparently.
Well, yeah,
and he can't do it consecutive time because he do it too many times, he ends up getting smaller and stuff.
Pretty much smaller and less intelligent is what we discover. And the more exhausted he is when he does it, the more often he does it, it looks like he fuses with the Titan more and more.
And also, the more he does it, the more chances, you know, every time he transforms, the smoke alert will like come out of the forge alert, and those people that want to, you know, kill him or get him, whatever, will be like, oh, there they are. Like,
yeah, it is very, this chapter, well, I mean, it is interesting because we do learn a lot of new stuff. Mostly what I'm learning is that, crap, why did I get into a monthly series? I hate these. But
well, we got four of them now, thanks.
Yeah. And, yeah, we sort of have them having to, now that they know that there are these, there is this one group in the military police, that they're the central military police. And...
Yeah, there's the normal and the central.
Yeah, pretty much. And the central are basically Gestapo, where they can go and do whatever they want, even going down to torture and murder. Yes. And, yeah, they basically go in so that they can go back to Tros so they can try and confront these people. And then Aaron and Krista get kidnapped, except it turns out that it's actually Jean in... his Aaron disguise again, and what looks like Armin.
Yeah, I thought it was Sasha. I was like, wait.
That's not Sasha. That's Armin.
I know. I looked through it again, and I was like, and then I saw your comment about it because we were talking on AIM about this anyway, and I was like, wait. Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Why do you think the Krista, in air quotes, looks so terrified of the guy obviously hitting on her?
Hey.
It's going to be surprise butt sex.
But yeah, there was this one bit where Aaron's like he was remembering on like when he turned to the time, he was like they were telling him some stuff like what he was doing and saying stuff and all that, like trying to write, you know, just
Yeah.
getting more deep into some things that even he didn't know about. And then there was a part where he had that little memory of some woman looks just like Krista, or Historia, her real name,
Well,
but with black hair. And
yeah, well.
no, but then right before that, there was like when he was remembering his father. I was like, wait a second.
Well, honestly, I thought that the woman that he sees and he doesn't know where she's from, she looks more like a female version of him. You know? Doesn't look like his mother, but she just looks straight
I
up
know, I'm not
like
sure. I
Aaron as
wouldn't
a
think.
girl. So, yeah, that's actually a good catch. It might be that there's some connection between Aaron and Krista, or Historia as she is called. So yeah, that's actually a good catch. That'd be kind of interesting. But yeah, so basically now we're just kind of trying to figure out what the deal. They're trying to get closer to Krista's family and discover, you know, what the deal is with the walls having titans in them.
Yeah, and why is it that Central doesn't want to protect the people, huh? Why do they want the Titans to go in and kill them all?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's more that. It's more they have other things that they're more worried about. Now, I did get a little kick out of with the way all those, you know, those regular, those commoners, civilians were all, oh yeah, you, how come you
I
don't accomplish anything but you still get eaten? I'm like, dude, do you want to take their place? I
Do you
mean,
want to take that place?
really?
Get you know, like you see that guy there? He lost his left arm or right arm, I think it was. And
Yeah.
that guy lost his leg, and that guy kind of well,
Lost
his head is gone, so
everything.
he's already dead. You don't
Yeah.
see him dead.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, sure, maybe people are like, oh, we shouldn't be wasting money on you going outside and on expeditions and whatnot when it's like, you know, you're not
They'll be
learning
singing a
anything.
different tune when the Titans break through and eat them all.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. It's like, dude, I think it's more important to have people that are experienced in killing titans in case the walls break. Whether it means that they're wasting money and not actually learning anything while by going outside on expeditions, what they are learning is how to kill titans very well. Because if we learned one thing, it's that trainees suck at that. They kind of get eaten very quickly. So having
I'm
people
so
like,
sorry about those babies.
having people like Levi around, even if you don't see him doing anything, you know, productive, is still very useful because he's basically the only person besides maybe Mikasa who can actually kill a Titan successfully every time. So, you know, and he used to have people that were just as good at, almost as good as him at it, except they kind of died to a human in a Titan's body who was kind of at an unfair advantage. So, but this chapter was, yeah, it was good. I liked it. It's definitely moving the plot along. We get a lot of new information and stuff. And Aaron gets kidnapped again. Well, except it's not him, it's Jean this time. So,
And well, Aaron and Krista get kidnapped, but they're doubles.
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah,
So,
doubles.
yeah, but it doesn't look like anything bad will happen to them because it's basically a trap and the Survey Corps are all pretty much surrounding the place. So, yep. Now we have to wait a month before we get more.
I just hope Armin gets saved because I don't want him to suffer.
Yeah, that would be like, oh, dude, why? No, but yeah, this is very much. Yeah, I think overall with this series, I'm kind of surprised with how little has actually happened. I mean, I was thinking that there was going to be so much more that happens in this series, but actually, the events, I mean, it's not that many chapters. It's less than 100, and sure, they're monthly chapters, but they tend to, you know, it's not like you move through events as fast in a monthly chapter as you do on a weekly chapter. So I'm kind of interested if it is close, if the series is close to being finished, to see how it actually ends, because there certainly are plenty of questions that have been raised, and I'm
There's
looking
a
for it.
lot of stuff I want to know, especially the bit about that whole how Aaron was thinking of
Yeah.
that. I was like, what? I was like,
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing more. But I think that wraps up our discussion, doesn't it? That's all of the chapters we have to talk about, right?
We actually went through all that. It's amazing.
Yes. Yes, we did. That was amazing. That was quite nice. We accomplished it.
Yep.
Well done. Much success. All right. Let's see. I think that about wraps us up here. So let's go ahead and move on and wrap up this episode, shall we?
Yep.
This has been Manga Cubed, episode 79, for the week of January 6, 2013, posted slightly after that, I'm sorry. Nonetheless, this week we discussed One Piece volumes 1 through 3, and we've remembered why this is the best damn manga there is.
You heard that right.
Indeed. We also discussed quite a few chapters this week, and we had some extra ones that we had to go over. We've also started a discussion of Attack on Titan, starting with episode 53.
Chapter.
Right. Well, sometimes in Japanese they say episode instead of chapter, so...
Well, it's because in Japanese they say, like, book and...
Yeah, well...
Chapter and word and eyes and all this stuff, the number, don't they?
I stand by my slip of the tongue. Nonetheless,
at least makes sense.
Yeah. So Attack on Titan's a bit of an odd one since we're talking about it starting with without talking about the rest of it, but we'll get to that. I've got volume 1 sitting right here. We'll get to it eventually. We're just at the moment. It's One Piece time, baby. Other manga may have to wait a little bit until we say no more, no more One Piece. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. That was a Futurama reference, by the way.
Oh, right.
Snoo, snoo. Oh. Yes, I did just compare One Piece to Snoo, snoo.
Futurama, my favorite anime.
We need to go over that series sometime. We need to do a cartoon marathon cast of that. Just go through the entire series. It's all on Netflix now. So.
And then you'll question why I've not cried at some of these episodes. Like,
I will chew you out for that. Actually, it'll be more like... there'll be like a moment of silence and you'll be all, Derek? And I'll be like, give me a sec. And he's like, Derek, you okay? I'm fine. Shut up, man. It's the dog. Why did they give him Brian's voice? That's terrible. No, but... Yeah, anyway, yeah. That is for a completely different podcast. Right now, what we need to do is we need to wrap up this week's episode. And of course, we can't finish the episode without going over the author comments. Starting with One Piece's Eiichiro Oda. Happy New Year. Last year, I felt like I abused my body throughout the whole year, and I was cursed for overdoing it. I'm going to do it all over again this year. Gosh darn it, Oda, take a break. Don't kill yourself.
Oh, boy.
I think that's the thing about Oda. You can tell the man loves his work. He has been doing this for, I don't know, has it been like...
More than a decade.
Well, yeah, it was 1997, so by 2007, it's been like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. 16 years almost, whatever it is. It's been a long time. It's been... more than a decade and a half. And,
dude, take a break.
Yeah, and don't he still loves yourself. His work.
If I slip off, you know, the reader's going to figure it out. And I don't want them to be sad. I don't want everyone to be sad. I don't want myself to be sad.
Well, I don't think
it's... my muse to be sad.
I don't think it's even entirely he doesn't want to disappoint his readers. I know that's part of it. But I'm pretty sure he would go crazy if he wasn't writing and drawing One Piece. The man is insane. He just loves this series that he's been going on with for over 10 years.
Over amazing. Why can't handle it?
Yeah. Yeah, it just... There's going to be a lot of Oda fanboying throughout this beginning of the third season of our podcast. I apologize for that, people. That kind of happens when we're reminded how much of a freaking genius this man is. Speaking of genius... I was being facetious. Please, Mo, read what Masashi Kishimoto has to say.
Naruto's Masashi Kishimoto. I put my scarf in the dryer and changed shape. It's totally choking me.
His scarf is a disenfranchised Naruto fan. He's like, how dare you! This war has been going on for 2 years! Scarf-a-son! You're choking me! I'd be amused if it was a Simpsons scarf and it had Homer on it. Okay, well, anyway. Toriko's Mitsutoshi Shimabukuro. Happy New Year. This brings a conclusion to the human world arc. Thanks for everything so far. Okay, there we go. Straight up says it. The human world arc is done. Now we're moving into something bigger. I think that's something we were kind of worried about throughout this year with Toriko, that we're sort of thinking, is it wrapping up? You know, is this going to be the end? Is this, we've had such big epic moments and we have this big epic fight. Is he wrapping the series up? I mean, I know there was no talk of the series ending, but it just felt like it was moving to some kind of conclusion with finality. But
yeah,
now,
also too.
Yeah, but now that we have a name for the years of Toriko that we've had, and it's called the Human World Arc, you just get this feeling that things are going to get bigger. So much bigger, and this series has a way to keep going, and it's going to be great.
Especially since we've seen the map of the gourmet world, and it's like, even though it's just the outside, it's just like a freaking rectangle, but it's like, holy crap, I didn't explore all that.
Yeah, no, it's like the human world is this, like, tiny rectangle. You've got the entirety of the rest of the freaking world.
I know, I know. Well,
yeah, that's...
Man, towards the outside.
Yeah, this is going to be... Yeah, this is going to be amazing. But anyway, let's move on.
Nisekoi Nawashikomi. The anime is about to start. Pretty soon we'll be able to see the Nisekoi characters moving around and talking.
Huh. Is the anime a winter release?
It's a winter release. It's going to come out next week.
Oh, okay. Was there an update on the 14th? Yeah, was there an update saying that it was being put out on Crunchyroll?
Yeah.
Sweet. I can watch it on my TV. All right. Bleach's Tite Kubo. I've been so busy during the holiday season that I haven't been able to do anything. That, of course, includes my manga pages.
Uh-oh. Well, of course, he's been roasting his chestnuts on open fire. Not surprised.
Yeah, get back to work. No, but yeah, Bleach has been pretty good this year. I mean, it's not been phenomenal. It's not been to the levels that it was before, but it's actually been pretty good, I find. It's been
enjoyable.
And
yet it's ending.
Yeah. Well, if it ends well, I'll be happy. And it kind of
That's kind of why we're like, at least end it well. Don't...
Yeah, it feels like the manga is going to conclude satisfactorily, at least. It may not be at the top of its game, but, you know, it's not going to be a train wreck. All right, what else
we'll
do
have
we have?
We'll have to see first.
Well, yeah, but we will see.
Triggers, Daisuke Ashihara, Happy New Year. I'm going to work hard for all of you again this year.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, he's been doing well this year. I feel like he deserves the... minimum amount of sarcasm on our part. But Blue Exorcist is...
Kazue Kato.
Blue Exorcist's Kazue Kato. Happy New Year. Thanks for voting. I cried because of Konekamaro's results.
Wait, what? I didn't see...
I don't know. Anyway, so we have...
They're going to be releasing All You Need Is Kill or something.
Yeah, it's All You Need Is Kill, of which there's going to be a manga version, there's going to be a graphic novel version, and there is a movie based on it starring Tom Cruise. There is going to be an early Saturday release. Son of a bitch, that's tomorrow. There's going to be an early Saturday release. Then, after that, the regular issue won't be back until January 20th.
What the crap? Quinta Kamara is even on here. What the heck?
I guess that's why she cried. No, but, yeah, so our plans for the podcast at the moment, here's what we should do. There's going to be a special Obata issue, and Obata is awesome, so we're definitely going to cover this. And since there won't be any regular manga for, like, until the 20th, so we've got another week and a bit before we get even more. Yeah, well, since this issue released, it will have been 2 weeks until the regular issue returns. So we'll definitely go over this one. What we should also do is this would be a good time for us to go over those entries for that competition. which I think we've been putting off and we should definitely take a look at and read, which I can imagine the Obata issue won't be too long. So since it's a special issue, that will give us time to discuss these other manga as well. What do you think?
It's on Saturday?
Yeah. Weird.
Weird?
I know, right? Well, that will have to change our recording schedule a little bit. It might mean
we actually get this episode out next week.
Well, there won't be a new manga. There won't be a new Weekly Shonen Jump this coming Monday. Instead, there's a special issue coming out on Saturday. And then everything comes back on the 20th, the following week.
Ah.
So, yeah, that's what we're looking at right now. And so, okay. Yeah, I have to say, though, I kept confusing All You Need Is Kill with Kill La Kill. Where it was just like I'd look at screen caps from Kill La Kill, and I was just thinking...
Yeah.
This doesn't look like this could have be like this character could be played by Tom Cruise. It's a scantily clad female. There's a very small section of the population that wants to see Tom Cruise in that outfit. I'm not one of them. Fortunately, that's not what is actually going on. So this should actually be kind of interesting to see what they do with that. But
it's a good thing you point out the battle since me. So I was like, wait, is that Kill La Kill? Which I all you need is
when you read that title, I heard the hesitation and I knew exactly what you were thinking. I was like, he's thinking about the one with the scantily clad girl. Well, that narrows down the choices.
Now I know what that one series that was that comic was talking about. Anyway, that's something else.
Yeah, but yeah, so I think this about wraps things up as far as that goes. Our plans will be we're going to do a little bit of early recording, possibly get an earlier episode out, rather than waiting forever. And so this next episode, even though we don't have any new Weekly Shonen Jump chapters, we probably will have the Kodansha chapters, so we'll have to wait till Tuesday to read those. But we will still go over One Piece, so we're going to start reading that right away because we kind of have to. But for now, it is time for us to talk about our rankings for the week.
My rankings are messed up because for some reason One Piece is not on here.
Well, I decided to just ignore that and put One Piece on anyway. So let's start off. Fourth place, what do you have, Mo?
Dragon Ball.
Okay, why Dragon Ball?
Well, like I said, the big will probably saw Vegeta being the hero in like some sort of reverse psychology-ish way, which is kind of funny, but it's also kind of pretty neat how despite being, we can all, he's not like the other characters that like fail every time with their move, really. He has to manage to hit and cut and go on tail. I'm like, hey, I meant to stop him. Oh no, you're crushing me. naked boy on my face.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see that. Personally, my number four is Bleach, mostly because Masque de Masculine is just entertaining. What can I say? And I think the fight with Renji has actually been really good, overall. It kind of, it's stretching out a little bit where you do the whole Renji beats him at the end of the chapter, then the beginning of the next chapter, we find out why he's not beaten, and then we see at the end of the chapter Renji does something that signifies that he'll have the upper hand. It's getting a bit repetitive, but still better than what some of the other stuff Bleach has done, and so I'm not going to complain. All right, what's your number three?
That's funny. You just said what my number three was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, why is Bleach so high?
Well, like you said, despite I was kind of perturbed by his design and his... I look at his chest and it's like, that just does not look right.
He's like, why? Why does he have nipple covers?
That's not why I even mean. I mean, like, his... pectorals just look so weird. I'm like,
what? Okay, weird pectorals in Bleach. Do tell.
Yes, but yeah.
That's like.
And then that weird freaking design of the wings. I'm like, what the?
Yeah, that was. It kind of reminded me of that one Arrancar whose name I can't remember. He was the flamboyant one that fought Yumichika.
Leroy?
Was that? I don't know. The one that... No, no, no. I don't think
that.
You know, the one that was, like, used roses or whatnot.
That was the one. Wait.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me in that design, except Mask is not meant to be... Is not meant to be obviously...
flamboyant.
Yes, that word.
I know he's not. It's just, I just look so silly. I'm like, just looking like,
well,
what?
Yeah, it's like he takes some like flamboyant tendencies, but it doesn't feel like he's meant to, you know, it's not like he's meant to be a slightly...
I wasn't saying he was flamboyant, I'm just saying he's really silly.
Yeah, true, but, you know, still, it's like he takes certain elements from flamboyancy without being, you know, offensively flamboyant, I find, which I think...
It wasn't offensive, it was just silly and just...
Yeah, well, I think that kind of works for me, you know? Where, yeah, sure, this is kind of freaking weird, but at the same time, it works for him, you know?
All right. That's why it's number 3 and yours is number 4.
Indeed, and my number 3 is, in fact, World Trigger. Because, yeah, I have found that I just really like the way the chapter built up the sense that there's a legitimate threat here. You know, it's not going to be... Oh, these things are going to kill them, and then they'll have to bail out, and then, what are they going to do? They're going to go after other people or whatnot, which would be a threat, but this is a much more immediate threat, and it works outside the box. It's not they're a threat because they can kill them. They're a threat because they will capture them, and that will not go well for them. You know? That's why I like it. All right. Mo, what's your number 2?
Man, that's actually hard. I'm trying to decide between... I'll say Nisekoi.
Nisekoi? Okay. I don't know. What's your reason for it?
For some reason, I guess, let's see. I remember. Because, you know, how they're pretty much seen as, you know how most series have girls that go, oh, I like the guy, and then they kind of think about it. And then she's actually the only girl that's shows you as a guy. I mean, the other one, like Marcus, he's very open, but he's rather like not confused and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And Chitoge doesn't let him know that he really likes him and not just hates him, whatever.
Right.
Now, and on there, you know, we know that she's liked him for a long time. But to see that she puts down her, you know, her whole, oh, Destiny will get us together if I just write the wish down. No, she just, like, no, I don't want that. I want him. And
You know, it's...
Oh, that's good. That deserves number 2 for me.
Yeah, it's number 2 for me as well, and I like what you said.
And it was funny because of her reaction.
Yeah. Well, that goes without saying. But you see, what I like about what you said is that it sparked a thought in my head where this chapter kind of shows us what love actually is. You know, a lot of people think of love in selfish terms and, oh, I want to be with this person. If I can't be with this person, I will die. You know, in Onodera's case, she starts out wanting to be with him, wanting to use this possibly supernatural solution to be with him. And then granted, she realizes she has many embarrassing encounters and she, by the end... Partially it's done because she can't deal with the embarrassment anymore, but she realizes something. She decides that it's more important that he is happy, that his wish comes true, than it is for her to be with him. You know, it's not like she's saying, oh, I will give up being with you so that you can be happy. No, it's more she puts what would make her happy second to what will make him happy. And what would make him happy in this case is the animals liking him. Granted, originally he was planning on doing exactly what she did, and her sticking with her wish to want to be his girlfriend would probably make him a lot happier than the animals liking him. But she doesn't know that. So from her point of view, she realizes, okay, this is his wish. I will sacrifice supernatural intervention to make me his girlfriend for the sake of his wish coming true. Which that, what I feel, is really nice because that's what I feel love is more about. It's not about, I'm going to be with this person. I have to be with this person. They will not be happy unless they're with me, and I will not be happy unless I'm with them.
That's terrifying. That's a giant.
You know, it's a mentality that is not healthy. And I find that this is a very frank and very pure definition of what love actually is, and I really like it. It adds a level to to an immensely funny chapter that I find just makes it so much more enjoyable. And it works really well because she is very much that character where she does put others before her. And I feel that she, out of all the characters, that idea can be brought across best with her. Mm-hmm. So, all right. What is your number one to start off? We might be surprised.
One Piece.
Okay, we're not surprised. My number one is also One Piece.
Here's why. It's because, okay, you know how the title is called What Soldier Wants?
Yeah.
You know how Mitsuko is pretty much the romance love? This is more like the familial love.
Yes.
The father wanting to protect his daughter. No matter what, even if he's going to fall apart. That rang good for me.
Yeah, definitely.
And that makes it sad if that's his soldier, you know. Yeah. Well, he won't, but still is.
Well, no. This is the new bloodthirsty Oda. No, but I definitely agree with you. That is, you know, carrying on the thread of what we brought up a little just now. It does give the chapter a little bit something more that we haven't, you know, that I didn't notice at first. I do feel that this chapter is very much One Piece focuses very much on the love of friends, the love of family, not so much romantic love, because it's focusing on something different, something that is often forgotten and is actually very important. I would even say more important than most romantic love.
It's a romance, but not a romance.
Exactly, yeah. I
see what you did there, Holly.
Yeah. What I find is interesting about this is that it's an idea that Disney has actually recently, you know, used in their most recent movie in Frozen. This whole idea of the importance of love of family over love, romantic love, you know? I find that it's a very good message, a very enjoyable message, one that I find that is definitely something that should be focused on for a while, and I can commend Disney for doing that, but at the same time, Oda did it first. He's been doing it for years. And I actually like that a lot better, because if he were to give in and to start having there be romantic love between characters, it would detract from what's so important in these characters' lives, which is their love for each other as friends and family. And so, you know, I mean, this has actually been kind of a refreshing week as far as love is concerned, because on the one hand, we get a nice, very refreshing view of romantic love, and then we once again get reminded of another kind of love that we forget about so often. It's great. I love it.
Funny, because that's actually the kind of love I focus on in mine, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I heard the whole into the whole romance stuff. I was like, yo, romance. I was like, wait, it's kind of stupid, but the way I look at it, I was like, you know, I don't like this kind of romance. I don't like the deep, not self-sacrificing, but, you know, the kind of just, you know, understand.
Well, yeah, I do have to say, I still like romantic love in fiction.
Yeah.
But
it's not always
we shouldn't, yeah, it. But we shouldn't have to only focus on that love. And I do feel that there's kind of a definite thread of that thinking in recent times, which I think is good. It's good to be able to focus on, you know, the relationships with your families are going to be more lasting. I mean, sure, you become romantically involved with someone, you get married or live together, whatever your preference is, and you spend your life together, you know, it's you become family. So there's a bit of a combination of romantic love and family love there. You know, it's a bit of, you get two love for the price of one. That's good. No, but anyway, I think that about wraps things up. We don't have any feedback or anything to go over. Remember, burninglizardstudios@gmail.com. You can send all your feedback there. You can also find me at Burning Lizard on Twitter, or you could go to burninglizardstudios.com where we upload all our episodes. Or you could go to the older site, burninglizardstudios.blogspot.com, which is pretty much defunct at the moment, since I've been uploading everything to the new site and we've been working on getting the new site going. But at the same time, you can still go there. I check it every once in a while if you have any questions. You can also look us up on Podomatic, of course. You can look up both of our feeds, the one that has just the most recent episodes and the one that has all of the episodes. You can look that up and, you know, give us feedback and rate us on iTunes. And I think that about wraps everything up. I don't have anything else I need to mention. And so I will end this episode by reminding you that the manga is always better. Except in the case of the first episode of One Piece Action. Alright, we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.